listener-supported non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. You are locked into WHFR Dearborn, featuring local and independent artists. Welcome to another Tuesday Radio Vault. A look at the lighter side of some historical programs. Going back, we're gonna unleash on you some tried and true programs, as well as some you might not have heard before. We're going to kick it off in just a moment with Ozzie and Harriet. This is a show from 1944 where Ozzie becomes a dog catcher from the Armed Forces Radio Service. And if you've listened to this program for any length of time, you know that the Armed Forces version of these old recordings is the same as the domestic version, except for the fact that there's no commercials. And that's particularly advantageous for us at this station, because we don't play commercials, of course. So Ozzie and Harriet to start, and then we're going to take a listen to the Great Gildersleeve from about 10 years later, from 1954. For our middle segment, we will hear the Great Gildersleeve in the Lux Radio Theater presentation of The Show Off, starring Harold Perry, from 1943. And then we wind it up today for our third hour with our friend Jack Benny. We'll hear an episode that originated from Livermore, California, from a military base, as a matter of fact. And then we will hear the Jack Benny Show with Barbara Stanwyck. Barbara Stanwyck got the lead role in the movie Sorry, Wrong Number, based on the suspense play on radio. So we'll hear that for our wrap-up hour today. Once again, Radio Vault comes your way each and every Tuesday between 10 o'clock and 1 o'clock, playing the classic radio shows of a unheard-of variety. Here at 89.3 WHFR. And for those of you who are mystery fans, we have a special program for you as well that comes your way on Sunday night for Sunday Night Mysteries. So with that out of the way, let's get on with the festivities, shall we? From 1944.
The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet. Presenting America's favorite young couple, Ozzie Nelson and Harriet Hillier. And now let's see what's going on in the Nelson family.
What are you writing, dear?
Just a letter.
Is it a secret?
No, it's no secret. It's just a letter.
Oh, that's different. Anyone I know?
No, dear. Would you mind not speaking to me for just a couple of minutes? I'm trying to concentrate here.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you looking for something, dear?
Yes. Have you seen the dictionary?
What word do you want to know how to spell?
Well, I know how to spell it. I just want to make sure I'm right. Where is that dictionary?
Well, what's the word?
I don't know whether you've even heard of it. It's demagogue.
Oh, demagogue?
Yes.
D-E-M-A-G-O-G-U-E.
Harriet, let's not guess, shall we? A, B, C, D. Oh, yeah. Delve, demagnetize, a demagogue. D-E-M-A-G-O-G-U-E.
What'd I tell you?
Harriet, please, I knew how to spell the word. I had it written down, as a matter of fact. Just wanted to double check.
What are you looking for now?
Have you seen my eraser?
That's what happened two nights ago. And that brings us right up to date. Now, let's see. Where were we? Oh, yes. They're at breakfast, and Harriet says...
Ozzie, I wish you'd put down that paper and drink your coffee.
Just a minute, dear. I just wanted... Oh. Say, Harriet.
Yes, dear?
Listen to this. I just happened to stumble across it here in letters to the editor. Would you care to hear it?
Your coffee's getting cold.
Dear sir, recent surveys show that an alarming number of voters are shirking their duties by failing to register for the coming elections. This is indeed...
Good morning, Mother. Good morning, dear.
Good morning, Ricky. Sit down, will you, Ricky? There's something here I want to read to your mother. Dear sirs, recent surveys have... Ricky, do you have to crunch on that toast this very minute? Trying to read something to your mother. Dear sirs, recent surveys show that an alarming number of voters are shirking their duties by failing to register
morning,
for the...
Good morning, dear.
David, I beat you down to breakfast this morning.
No wonder you didn't comb your hair.
Good morning, David. Sit down, would you please? Where was I? Oh, yes. This is a tragic commentary on the... David, please. Your mother is very anxious to hear a certain article I'm trying to read to her. This is a tragic commentary on the decline of civic responsibility.
David didn't wash his face, Snitchy.
These citizens who fail to register are guilty of negligence and indifference to public duty.
You know, boys, I think we could get along better if there wasn't quite so much tattling on
Harriet,
each other.
Do you or do you not want to hear this?
Well, of course I do, dear. Go ahead, I'm listening.
It's impossible for you to talk to the boys and hear what I'm reading at the same time.
Those citizens who fail to register are guilty of moral negligence and indifference to public duty.
Our most precious right must be exercised. We must protect our traditional principles.
The principal at my school is Miss Colbert.
That's fine, Ricky.
She's very nice, too.
I'll be through in just a moment. Otherwise, we abandon true democracy for the rule of selfish demagogues.
Demagogues?
Yes, demagogues. Responsible citizens, register and vote in the coming elections. What do you think of it?
Well, I think it's positively brilliant.
Oh. Guess who wrote it?
Let me see. George Bernard Shaw?
No.
Secretary of State Burns?
No.
Ozzie Nelson?
Absolutely correct. Yeah, there it is. See? Ozzie Nelson. See, there it is, boys. Your father's name? Paper?
Can we eat our toast now?
Is that all the impression it makes when I get my name in the paper?
Is that good?
You know that Cocker Spaniel of Will Thornberry's? He had his picture in the paper last month.
Yes, but did he write a letter?
Ozzie, dear, we're very proud of you. It's an excellent letter.
Oh, thank you, dear. You know something, Harriet? Writing to your newspaper can be a valuable public service, especially when a man has the ability to express himself with clarity and force.
That's true, dear. Some more toast?
Oh, yes, thank you. Goodness knows there are plenty of issues that are confusing the public right now.
I think I'll get some scissors and cut that article out before I forget.
Oh, what for, Harriet?
Well, I want to save it to show to people.
Harriet, it's not worth talking about even. What is it? I just happened to write an ordinary letter reminding the people to get out and register and vote. That's all.
What was that? Did you hear something hit against the front door then?
Oh, yes, I think it was just the morning paper.
But we already got our paper.
Well, I kind of figured that my letter might be in the paper today, so I asked the boy to ride back and get a few extra for us.
But I only heard one hit against... Oh.
I thought you might want to send a copy to your mother and my mother and... Oh. Maybe I better get the papers.
Ozzie, stay away from that door, you'll be killed! Ozzie, I think somebody's at the front door.
I'm answering it now, dear. Oh, good morning.
Good morning indeed, sir. Have I the privilege of addressing Mr. Ozzie Nelson?
That's right.
It is a privilege to meet you, sir. My name is Pennyfeather. Pennymore Pennyfeather. Here's my card.
Well, thank you. Ah, oh, I see you're chairman of the Citizens Political Pressure Committee.
I have that privilege, Mr. Nelson. had the privilege of reading your letter in this morning's paper. And I want to tell you, sir, I consider it a privilege to meet you in person.
Oh, thank you.
May I have the privilege of coming in?
It's a privilege. Please do. Yes.
First of all, Mr. Nelson, a word about our organization. We are just average citizens. The man in the street, the woman in the house, the group in the Gallup poll marked doesn't know.
Oh.
For a long time, we've been called the vote that's gotten out. And frankly, Mr. Nelson, we are just fed up with being wielded.
Yes, but politically speaking, what's your direction?
In these times, who knows? We just put pressure on everybody. But first of all, sir, allow me to congratulate you on the letter you sent to the paper.
Oh, it was nothing.
Your inspiration.
Have a seat.
Clear, concise thinking. Magnificently presented.
Take the one with the cushion.
Thank you. Very comfortable indeed, sir. Mr. Nelson, I might as well get right down to business. At our committee meeting this afternoon, your letter to the editor was read, and it was suggested that I pay you a visit and get to know you a little better.
Well, I don't quite understand.
Clumsy of me, of course, you're wondering. Mr. Nelson, the Citizens Committee is most particular about the character of any candidate whom it sponsors.
Candidate?
Your letter to the newspaper indicated that you are a man with a deep sense of civic responsibility. You, Mr. Nelson, are the kind of man the committee likes to present to the taxpayers.
But Mr. Pennyway...
Pennyfeather.
Mr. Pennyfeather. Do you mean what I think you do?
We are considering you, sir, for the office of Public Protective Executive Custodian under our banner.
Public Executive Protective Custodian?
Public Protective Executive Custodian.
This is a great honor. I don't know what to say.
Your name was only suggested, you understand.
Yes.
I was appointed to see you and decide if you were, well, sort of look you over, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
Thank you.
I didn't have time to shave this morning, but
that's
I usually...
perfectly all right.
Yes.
Mr. Nelson.
Yes?
I know, of course, that from your letter, you are aware of the tremendous responsibilities that any man in public office has.
Of course.
Therefore, you will not mind if I ask you a few questions.
Not at all, sir.
Do you hold public office now?
No.
No. Have you ever been convicted of a felony?
No.
You seem to be just the type we're looking for.
I don't know. Do you mind if I call my wife?
Not at all. I'd like to meet her.
Hey, Harriet!
People are always curious about the relationship between a candidate and his wife.
Harriet, dear.
Yes, Ozzie?
Harriet, this is Mr. Featherweight.
It's Penny Feather.
Penny Feather.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Mrs. Nelson, we have asked your husband to be a candidate for public office.
Really?
Yes, for public executive protective custodian.
Public protective executive.
Executive.
Well, that sounds wonderful.
Well, now, just a moment, Harriet. You must realize what an important step this is. Our quiet, peaceful home life here will all be changed. We'll live in the public eye, subject always to criticism. Few thanks, long hours.
I always thought a politician's hours were short.
Not just before election.
Think it over, Harriet. It's a big step. You know the old saying, politics make strange bedfeathers. Hey, Mr. Pennyfellow? Well, what do you say, dear?
It's Penny Feather.
Certainly, Ozzie. I think it's a great honor.
Oh. Harriet, take me by the hand, dear. We accept the nomination, Mr. Penny Pincher.
Penny Feather. And the Citizens Committee is proud to endorse a man of your caliber.
I shall do my best to deserve your confidence.
With that attitude, you cannot fail.
I am inexperienced, but I promise you sincerity and honest effort.
That's the kind of man we need in office.
And I...
Take it easy, fellas. You're both on the same side.
Well, goodbye, Mr. Public Executive Protective Custodian. Or is it Protective Executive? Oh, well. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye, Mr. Pennyfeather.
It's Pennyfeather. Oh, yes. Goodbye.
And if elected, I promise I shall do my utmost to discharge efficiently and honestly the duties of the office to which you have entrusted me. Harriet, I'm not through yet.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, dear.
I pledge myself to the service of the people. I pledge every bone and muscle in my body, every hair on my head, every drop of blood in my veins.
Ozzie, isn't that a little bit strong?
Well, you got to impress him with your sincerity.
Well, I know, dear, but do you have to bleed on him?
maybe just the bone, muscle, and hair would be enough. And may I
add... Go ahead, dear. I want to find out about lunch.
It is every citizen's duty to register...
Gloria!
...and vote for the candidate of his choice.
Gloria! Can you call me Mrs. Nelson?
And keep out the irresponsible charlatan and worthless demagogue.
I didn't ask to come in. Somebody called me.
No, Gloria. Mr. Nelson's just making a speech. I called you to ask you about lunch.
Gloria, you may be interested to know that I'm running for the office of Public Executive Protective Custodian.
Oh, that's wonderful, Mr. Nelson. Will vegetable stew be all right for lunch?
Yes, it sounds wonderful.
By the way, somebody just delivered this big book for you, Mr. Nelson.
Oh, yes, thank you. That's the book Mr. Pennyfeather promised to send me about the city ordinances and organization. By the way, Gloria, I want you to see what you think of the end of my speech. And I also promise that if elected, I will leave no stone unturned. I will use all my energy, my time, all my waking hours, if necessary, to make this office a model of efficiency and good government.
Oh, that's cute. Oh, thank you. I'm sure you'll be elected.
Well, thanks a lot, Gloria, but it isn't such a cinch.
Oh, I'm positive you'll win.
You can't be sure. Some people think my opponent will win.
Oh, you've got an opponent. That's a little different, but I'll vote for you, Mr. Nelson.
Well, thanks very much, Gloria, but I don't want you to vote for me unless you think I'm the best man for the job. See, you have to realize it's the duty of a citizen not only to register and vote, but also to keep informed, to know all about the candidates and the duties of their office, and then decide which candidate is capable.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I should know more about it. Mr. Nelson, is your opponent capable?
Well, I don't know.
Who is your opponent?
Well, he's... Say, come to think of it, I didn't ask.
What are the duties of your office?
Well, I'm not sure.
See, I wish I was a candidate instead of a voter. Then I wouldn't have to know anything either. Well, I'll think it over while I get lunch ready.
Say, by the way, Ozzy, what are you running for? I mean, what are the duties of this executive protective...
Say, frankly, I was just wondering the same thing myself. It's probably right in this book Gloria gave me. Let me see. Public offices. From the sound of it, I'd say it had something to do with the treasurer's office, wouldn't you? No, it's not in that section. Oh, it wouldn't be a minor office like that anyway. And look it up here close to the mayor. Here it is. Public Protective Executive Custodian. His duties shall consist of... Is lunch ready yet, dear?
Well, what office is it, Ozzy?
Office?
Yes, that's what you just looked up, isn't it? What are the duties of the office you're running for?
Harriet, the particular duties of the office aren't important.
Dear, but what are the duties?
Well, it doesn't matter much what a man does. It's the fact he's in public service, that he's doing his best for the people.
Ozzy, what are you running for?
Dog catcher.
Dog catcher?
Well, a head dog catcher.
Well, come on, Ozzy. Let's eat lunch. Are you still going to pass out cigars, dear?
Well, of course. Why not?
Well, wouldn't dog biscuits be more appropriate?
Harriet, that's a very cheap joke.
I don't know. I kind of like it.
The office of head dog catcher is a very honorable and historic office. It was established in 1874 by an act of the city council and has always been filled by honest and upright citizens.
That's interesting.
Besides, I can't get out of it.
Well, I don't see why you should want to, dear. After all, it is a public office, and it may be only the beginning for you. If you do a good job, maybe you can run for something else next year.
Say, that's right. That's the way to look at this job, as a stepping stone. Who knows where it could lead? Perhaps even to Washington someday.
Sure. From doghouse to White House.
Well, hello, boys.
Hi, Pop.
Hi, Pop.
What happened, fellas? Something go wrong in school?
Tell him, David. Might as well tell you, Pop. Ever since you started to run for dog catcher, all the kids we know with dogs won't speak to us.
Oh, so that's it.
Not only that, Will Thornberry's Cocker Spaniel won't speak to us either.
I'm sorry, Pop, but, well, none of the kids seem to like dog catchers.
Now, just a moment, boys. I think you've got this a little confused. You see, I won't be the man who goes out with the net and catches the dogs.
You won't?
No, I'll just be the man who sends the man out with the net to catch the dogs.
Oh.
That's not much better, is it?
Pop, please don't be a dog catcher.
Gosh, fellas, I never realized you felt this way about it.
We wanted to get a dog of our own.
Well, you can have a dog. I'll catch you I'll buy you a swell dog. Do you think just because I'm dog catcher, I'd object to having a dog in the house?
No, but how's the dog gonna feel?
No. Fellas, you've got to listen to me. You've got to see my side of it. I like dogs just as much as you do. And I promise you I'll be very careful. Oh, hello, Emmy Lou.
Oh, Mr. Nelson, I ran over as soon as I saw you come out of the house. I heard the news, and I want to tell you that I'm very proud of you.
Oh, thank you, Emmy Lou.
What an honor it is for me to live next door to you.
Oh, you're exaggerating.
Oh, no, I'm not. I can't help thinking how proud I'll be someday when a mad dog gets loose on Main Street and people's lives are in danger until you come along, dash in, and capture him with your bare hands.
I think they provide gloves for that.
See you now, standing there facing the mad beast. Slowly you hold out the can of Red Heart. He crouches. Your muscles flex. You're ready to throw the net over him. He grows tense. Suddenly he springs at you. You throw the net. It misses. The crowd scatters. But do you run?
Well, of course I...
No, you... No, Mr. Nelson, you don't. The mad dog's got you by the sleeve. Now his teeth are tearing the flesh off your arm. Your assistants run up and throw ropes and nets around him. He's captured, and you're a hero. Won't that be wonderful for the neighborhood?
You know, Emmy, you and the boys are giving me an entirely new picture of this situation. In fact, the whole thing gets less appealing by the minute.
Well, do you mean you'd rather not have the job, Mr. Nelson?
Well, for one thing, David and Ricky and even Harriet will probably disinherit me if I'm elected. You see, it seems nobody has much sympathy for dog catchers. We're an oppressed minority.
Well, if that's the way you feel about it, maybe you'll be lucky and lose the election.
No, not with my luck. They've already arranged for me to go out and make speeches and get votes.
Well, maybe the people won't like your speeches and won't vote for you.
Yay. Hey, that's an idea, Emmy Lou. Maybe I can campaign to lose votes.
Well, sure you could.
If I could succeed in making bad enough speeches, I may lose the election.
Oh, I've got faith in you, Mr. Nelson. You'll be able to do it. It'll be easy for you.
You're right, Emmy Lou. Wait, I'll see you later. I'm going to go prepare a few bad speeches.
Oh, Mr. Nelson, you're wonderful. The sacrifice you're making for your family.
Oh,
giving up what may be a brilliant political career. Just think, you might be elected dog catcher, then alderman, then mayor, governor. And then who can tell, you might run for president and have your picture taken with Frank Sinatra.
So a strange phenomenon takes place. The Rogers Road political machine grinds to a stop and slowly goes into reverse. Gradually gathers speed and more speed. Every cog turning smoothly. Every nut performing his function, turning out speeches. What would I do about loose dogs if I were elected? I'd do the same thing the present incumbent would do about loose dogs if I were the present incumbent and he were elected. That's what I'd do about loose dogs if I were elected. Turning out radio programs.
Wake up, America. Time to stump the precincts. Tonight, our guest expert is candidate for dog catcher, Ozzie Nelson. Mr. Nelson, I would like to ask you a question. Who will you vote for as dog catcher?
For my opponent, J.J.J.J. O'Mahony. He is experienced. He is independent. O'Mahony wears no dog's collar.
More speeches.
And so, members of the Ladies' Aid, Remember, a vote for me is a vote for inefficiency and corruption.
And in closing, Legionnaires, let me remind you again, elect me dog catcher, and in 6 months the dogs will be running this town.
So I say to you, daughters of Carrie Gibson, go to the polls tomorrow and vote for my opponent, J.J.J.J. O'Mahony.
Corny political jokes.
It has been stated by some irresponsible scandalmongers that my opponent, J.J.J.J. O'Mahony, was once seen pushing a dog off his lap. This is an unmitigated, scandalous untruth. That was no dog. That was his wife.
Grinding out dreams of handbills and billboards.
Ozzy Nelson, an able candidate, supports the platform of J.J.J.J. O'Mahony. Honesty, integrity, courage, airmail now 5 cents.
Settling campaign strategy.
Why should I shake your hand? I don't want your vote. Cigars? No thanks, I never use them. I'm calling upon you for one thing. Get out and vote. But remember, if I'm elected, this town will go to the dogs.
Right up to election day and election night, when Harriet says to Ozzy,
"It's 7 o'clock, dear. Why don't you see if some of the returns are coming in?"
And when the smoke of battle drifts away, the town will find in its midst one of the brightest political stars in the history of this city, the cleverest vote-getter of all time. In a very unorthodox, completely nutty campaign, this candidate on the ticket of the Citizens Committee...
Citizens Committee?
...swept all opposition before him by the novel method of pretending that he didn't want the job. I guess that it proves that nothing captures the heart of the American public like a good sense of humor.
Oh.
So let's all congratulate our new dog catcher. Congratulations wherever you are, Mr. Ozzy Nelson, and may you...
If that isn't the most amazing thing...
Well, it's terrible.
In a way, it's hilariously funny, I suppose, after you tried so hard to get defeated.
What am I going to tell my children?
That must be the committee to put the crown on your head.
Oh, well, Mr. Pennyfeather, come in.
Mr. Nelson, I hope you're thoroughly ashamed of yourself.
What do you mean?
To think that you, of all people, would do a thing like that.
But
after that wonderful letter you wrote to the paper, do you remember what you said in that letter?
Well, of course. What's that got to do with the election?
What's that got to do with the election? Haven't you heard?
That I won, certainly.
You won, yes. But you've also been disqualified.
Disqualified? I can't take office?
No, and all on a technicality, too. Mr. Nelson, you forgot to register.
That's impossible. If you forgot to register, how did you vote?
Holy smokes, I forgot that, too.
Oh.
You've been listening to The Adventures of Ozzy and Harriet. This is the Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.
And rather than a lengthy break for commercials, they inserted music, as you can hear. You are listening to Radio Vault. We just heard Ozzy and Harriet from 1944. On tap is the Great Gildersleeve, which we will get to. This is when they had Harold Perry in the title role. Actually, I believe it was Willard Waterman. I take that back. And then we'll hear later on Lux Radio Theater with Harold Perry. And based on the movie The Show Off, we'll hear how he portrayed that role. You know what I'm saying. Once again, it's Radio Vault. until 1 o'clock.
Remind yourself, every Monday night at 9 p.m., Beats to the Rhymes of Sean Daniel. Tune in. Going live every Monday from 9 to 11 p.m. Exclusively only heard at 89.3 WHFR.FM, the station making waves across the Great Lakes.
You guys just didn't want it bad enough. That should have been an easy win. What were you doing out there? You gotta hustle. You could have made that play if you'd been open.
On the car ride home after the game, when you think you're helping by telling me what I did wrong and what I need to work on, all I hear is that I'm not good enough, that I'm supposed to be perfect, that it's not okay to lose. On the car ride home, all I need to hear is how much you love me and enjoy watching me play, that my worth isn't determined by my performance, that even on my worst day, I am worthy. That you see me learning, growing, and doing my best. And that is enough.
This message presented by the MHSAA and the Michigan Interscholastic Athletic Administrators Association.
Willard Waterman as the Great Gildersleeve. Great Gildersleeve is brought to you, transcribed, by the Kraft Foods Company.
Well, I've been with Mr. Gildersleeve and Leroy a long time, and Bertie's seen a lot of changes around this house, and the biggest change is in Leroy. I'll let you in on something. That boy's got a girl. His uncle don't know it, but that boy's got a girl. And if all their telephone talks was laid end to end, they'd reach to Alexander Graham Bell.
Hello, Bertie.
Oh, Mr. Gildersleeve, you scared me.
I did?
You usually come in the front door, but today you came in the back door.
Well, I put up the car.
Yes, sir. But I didn't expect you at the back door because you usually come in the front door.
Bertie, if it'll make you feel better, I'll go out and come in the front door.
Oh, you in now?
Yeah. Well, I have to go make a phone call.
You can't make a phone call. The line's busy.
Oh?
I was going to call the grocery half hour ago, but the line was busy.
Bertie, we don't have a party line.
We got a party on the end of it now. Leroy on one end and Miss X on the other.
Who's Miss X?
That's his new girlfriend. The latest and the greatest.
Yes, yes. What could they be talking about this long?
I don't know what she's telling, but she sure knocked him for a loop.
What's this?
I went through the parlor a minute ago, and he had his legs draped over the back of the couch and his head down on the coffee table. That's what I call knock for a loop.
Well, I'll go get him off the line.
Yes, sir. When you get through talking to your girl, call me so I can call the grocery.
Yeah, all right, Bertie.
And after I left, get your gate, I'm going straight home and call you, Wendy.
No, he has head under the coffee table. I never saw anybody stand on his head while sitting on the couch.
Now tell me what you've been doing since I left you.
He just left her. Leroy.
Shh, I'm listening to Wendy.
Well, tell her to wind up the conversation.
Okay. Yeah? What's that now, Wendy? Yeah, sure. Uh-huh, good idea. You always have good ideas.
Young man, get off your head and terminate the conversation.
Gosh. I gotta hang up now, Wendy. Call me back. Bye.
My boy, I don't believe I know this Wendy, do I?
No, I don't think you do, Unc.
Who is she?
She's keen.
Well, undoubtedly. Where did you meet her?
One afternoon, we were going to the basketball game in Dinky's car, and I met her on the running board.
On the running board?
Yeah, we couldn't get a seat. You want to see her picture? I got it in my wallet.
Yeah, I'd like to.
Look here. I got it wrapped in cellophane.
Yeah.
How about that, huh? How about that?
A very pretty little girl. Yes, indeed.
Is that all you got to say?
What should I say?
Well, get with it, Unc. When a girl gives you her picture to put in your wallet, that's real out of space.
Oh?
We're going steady.
Since when?
Well, we were over at Sheila's house the other day, and we talked it over doing the shag.
Oh, my goodness.
Can I have some new pictures taken, Unc? Wendy wants one for her wallet.
You will see. I have to make my phone call now. I'll get it, Bertie.
I got it.
But...
Hello? Oh, hi, Wendy.
Oh, I'll never get the phone. I better go write a letter. Hello, Phoebe.
Hello, Mr. Gildersleeve. What can I do for you?
Well, I didn't have anything to do this evening, so I thought I'd drop in and chat. You might give me a couple of cigars.
Yeah, well, do you want the 1954 models?
What's the difference?
There's no difference. They're the ones I didn't sell you in 53.
Yes, yes. I thought you had a new model.
Well, that's an idea. The cigar people could do like the automobile manufacturers. Might boost the cigar sales if they came out with power smoking and dual exhaust.
Dual exhaust.
You blow the smoke out of both ears.
Phoebe, what's come over you tonight?
No, I'm just feeling a little frisky. Our new parrot talked back to Miss Peavy today.
It did. Taking quite a chance, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, it's new around there. One of these days, the feathers are going to fly.
How do you get along with the bird?
Oh, it has my admiration, I'm here to tell you. Stood right back on his hind legs and said to Mrs. Peavy, "Swab the deck, you lover."
Yeah, that parrot must have been in the Navy.
Yeah, it doesn't watch out, it'll be back in the Navy. Before I forget it, I better charge you for those cigars.
Oh, I see you have a new ledger.
Yeah, I call this my faith, hope, and charity ledger.
Oh?
Takes a lot of faith to charge the things to some people. And I hope they pay, and if they don't, I'm on charity.
Yeah, that's about right. Say, is that Leroy's name on your ledger?
Yeah, Leroy has a little account now.
Why does he need an account?
Same reason you do, Mr. Gildersleeve. He doesn't always have the money with him. He frequently brings a little girl in here for sodas.
You mean Wendy?
Yeah, they make quite a couple. When they started going steady, Leroy celebrated by buying her lipstick.
A lipstick?
Pink Dream, I believe they called it.
Pink Dream. That boy's going to give me nightmares.
It could be.
Well, I don't like the idea of Leroy concentrating on one girl at his age.
I don't see how he does it. They're all so cute.
Yeah, I'll have to talk with the boy. Some of these youngsters get serious about each other too early.
Oh, well, I wouldn't worry about Leroy.
They're too young to realize the obligations they undertake. Leroy will have to watch it, Peavy.
Well, let's help him. His present obligation is only $2.30 if you'd like to take care of it.
Oh, put it on my bill. Now, Leroy, I can't understand why you want to spend all of your time with one girl.
Well, I don't understand why you spend most of yours with a school principal.
Miss Henshaw is a very intelligent conversationalist. That's the reason. Leroy.
Okay. Guess I better go give her back her picture.
Well, that's up to you, my boy. I want you to remain friends. I have other girlfriends. There's Miss Tuttle, Miss McKinley, May Kelly.
Well, you got a lot of girls, but you always concentrate on one at a time.
Well...
You know how it is, don't you, Unc? When I get around Wendy, it's pretty hard to concentrate on anything else.
That proves you should see other girlfriends.
When I'm around other girls, I don't see anybody but Wendy.
Well, maybe you need glasses.
Oh, for corn's sake.
No, my boy, you're resisting this idea.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what I'll do. You've been wanting one of those sweaters at Hogan Brothers in your school colors.
Oh, boy, I'll say. All the kids are gone on those.
Well, if you'll divide your time a little bit, you may go right down and pick out yours.
No kidding?
You tell them to charge it to your old uncle.
Swell, Unc. I'm going right down. Be seeing you.
Yeah, Gildersleeve, you're so good handling children, you should have been the old woman who lived in the shoe.
feels good, too. Cold today. Uh-oh. Here comes Wendy. Well, if she wants me to walk with her, I'll tell her I have something else to do. I'll just be indifferent.
Hello, Leroy.
Hi, Wendy.
I didn't see you after school.
Well, I had something else to do.
I missed you.
Yeah? Well, I had something else to do.
Oh. Do you want to walk me down to the corner?
No, I'm going the other way.
Something wrong?
I'm just going the other way.
Well, goodbye, Leroy.
Wendy!
Yeah?
I'll go your way.
I've got to go down to the corner and catch my bus. We can wait on the bench.
Okay.
Isn't that a new sweater you're wearing?
Yeah, I just bought it.
I've always wanted to wear a boy's sweater.
Yeah?
Lots of girls do.
Yeah, some guys are stupid enough to give girls their sweaters.
No, I don't mean I'd wear just any boy's sweater. Sit down by me, Leroy.
Well, I guess I can wait here until your bus comes.
What I mean about the sweater, Leroy, is that I'd rather wear a boy's sweater than a girl's sweater. But I wouldn't dream of asking a boy to let me wear his sweater.
Well, you're different from a lot of girls anyway, Wendy.
I'm glad you think so.
I think so.
Anyway, your sweater wouldn't fit me. Your shoulders are so broad.
No, they're not so broad.
They look broad to me.
Well, I got muscles, if that's what you mean.
I just love a boy's sweater in our school colors. Purple and orange. They're real cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'll have to be leaving you in a couple of minutes. I see my bus coming down the street.
Oh, gosh, we just sat down. I haven't seen you all afternoon.
Don't I know it.
Can't you wait and take the next bus?
I could, but... But it's awful cold sitting here, Leroy.
Well, maybe you can wear my sweater until your bus comes.
Won't you get cold?
No, I got broad shoulders.
Cold out.
That you all, Miss Gillespie?
Yes, Bertie.
I thought that was you. Did you come home early to get in your phone call before Leroy beat you to it?
I don't think I'll have any more trouble getting the phone.
No, sir?
Well, Leroy's decided to spread himself around. He isn't going steady anymore.
Oh, that's news to me.
Well, I made a little deal with the boy. You know the slip-over sweater he's been wanting?
Yes, sir, in the school colors.
Yeah. I suggested that if he didn't see so much of Wendy, he could have the sweater.
In other words, you pull the wool over his eyes.
Yeah, when it comes to handling these things, I'm pretty cagey.
Oh, yes, sir.
Cold out. Hi, Unc. Hi, Bertie.
Hello, my boy.
Hello, Leroy. Boy, your teeth are chattering.
Yeah.
Leroy, where's your sweater?
My sweater? Well... Gosh, Unc, I met Wendy at the bus stop, and she was cold.
She's wearing your sweater?
Well, gosh.
Oh, my goodness. Bertie, what do you think of that?
I think somebody else pulled the wool over Leroy's eyes.
Great Gildersleeve will be back in just a minute.
I know my uncle's upset with me because I gave Wendy my new sweater. But it's been so long since he was my age, he just doesn't understand. When you're sitting on a bench with your best girl waiting for a bus, and she shivers with a cold and looks at you with those big, warm eyes?
Leroy, I don't understand you.
I don't understand myself, Unc.
Yeah, I've seen boys who were just clay in girls' hands, but I've never seen as big a hunk of putty as you.
Oh, gosh.
Want some more hot cocoa, Leroy?
No, Bertie, it's getting hot enough in here.
It's going to get hotter, young man. I thought we made a bargain. If you got your sweater, you were to stop going steady with Wendy.
She's a nice little girl, Miss Gillespie.
Leroy, get out your wallet and show him her picture.
I've seen her picture. I'm not objecting to Wendy. It's the principle of the thing. This going steady is not a healthy situation.
Okay, Uncle, okay. I've heard it.
Leroy, don't get on your high horse. I'm the one who's on the high horse.
Too many horses around here. Bertie's gonna get out before the stampede.
Why, when I was your age, Leroy...
Times have changed, Dunk. Grover Cleveland isn't president anymore.
Leroy.
Hello, everybody.
Oh, come in, Margie, my dear.
Aren't you gonna say hello, Leroy?
Hi.
What's the matter with him?
Well, I've been forced to take a hand in Leroy's little romance. He wants to go steady.
Unky, any girl who wants to go steady with Leroy, encourage it.
What?
We love him, but those ears. Who's the lucky girl?
Wendy Howard.
Oh, I know Wendy. She's darling.
Well, there's time enough later for that going steady business. Of course, I'm not going to be unreasonable about it. I'm just going to forbid it.
Hello, Miss Marjorie.
Hello, Bertie. Unky, I remember you forbidding me to do things, and I was all the more determined to do them.
Oh, Marjorie, you were a model girl, and it paid off. Now you're happily married to Bronco.
If you'll think back, there was a time you forbade me to go steady with Bronco, and look what happened.
You well.
Yes, sir, she married him, and now she's got twins.
Yeah, but you must admit Leroy is a good deal younger than Marjorie was when she first talked about going steady.
Oh, I don't know. I wanted to go steady with the milkman when I was 7.
Marjorie, this is serious.
Well, it might get to be serious if you insist on making such a big thing out of it. Why don't you be casual about it? Ask Leroy to invite Wendy over.
That's a good idea.
You mean encourage them?
It'll blow over all the sooner. Use your head, Unky.
By George, I will. Yeah, I'll do anything to have Leroy turn out the way you did.
Aw, isn't he nice, Bertie?
Yes, ma'am. He's going to see that Leroy has twins, too.
Leroy, may I come in? Looking out your window, I see.
Yeah. Can't do anything else. Might as well just sit and look.
Well, I've been doing some thinking. Why don't you invite Wendy over?
Are you kidding?
No, I mean it. Get her on the phone.
On the phone? Now I've heard everything.
I'm withdrawing my objection to your seeing Wendy.
Honest?
Honest.
Oh, boy, I'll phone Dinky and tell him to get his girl, and I'll get Wendy, and we'll get in Dink's car.
Wait a minute.
Yeah?
Just because you met Wendy on the running board is no reason for staying there. I want you to invite her over for dinner. Just the two of you.
Oh, Unc, you don't have to do that.
No, I want to. You'll have a fine evening together.
But, gosh.
No. It isn't any trouble. Just leave everything to me. Glad to do it.
Well, that's nice of you, Unc, but...
No more than I should do. Wendy's a fine little girl. You may see her as often as you like, my boy.
Gee, you're swell, Unc. I'll rush over to her house right now and tell her. Where's my old sweater?
Leroy, don't lose another sweater.
Well, more ice cream and cake for anybody?
Yeah, how about it, kiddies? Wendy?
No, thank you.
Leroy?
No, I'm up to here, Unc.
Well, I want this to be a nice evening for you two, so I got a lot of ice cream.
Oh, yes, sir. We're loaded.
It was a wonderful dinner, Bertie.
Thank you, dear.
Yeah. Now let's get going.
Where are you going?
Well, we've had dinner. We might go over to Wendy's house.
No, my boy, you can't just eat and run. I planned your evening here at home. Why, George, I believe in making the home an attractive place for the young people. We might have another game of Scrabble.
Oh, brother.
Of course, this time I'll let you two play. I'll just watch and help out with the words.
I don't believe I care to play Scrabble anymore. Would you, Leroy?
Not on a full stomach.
Well, whatever you say, this is your evening. Why don't we retire to the parlor?
Well, if you all decide you want some more ice cream later on, reload it.
Thanks, Bertie.
Leroy, you and Wendy want to sit on the couch? Yeah, that's where I usually sit when I have a date.
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I hadn't thought about it.
I'll just sit here on the piano bench.
Oh, do you play, Wendy?
Not as well as Leroy.
Well, I guess we better eliminate the piano then. It was a good dinner, wasn't it?
It was wonderful.
Yeah.
Yes, sir, by George, that was a good dinner.
Divine.
Yeah.
Well, perhaps I'd better leave you two.
Goodbye, Unc.
I'm not going anyplace. I'll be in the den in case you want me.
Oh, don't worry about us, Mr. Gildersleeve. Go wherever you like.
Yeah, anywhere at all.
Leroy, why don't you show Wendy the family album?
Family album?
He was a cute baby, Wendy.
I'd like to see the album sometime.
Well, the album's right there on the table. I brought it down from the attic. If you'll excuse me now.
Sure, glad to, Unc.
Your uncle sure is doing everything he can to make us enjoy the evening.
Unc's okay, but a little corny.
Oh, Leroy, the Corner Music Store has two new sides by Eddie Fisher.
Yeah? He's solid, man. What are they, 45 or 78?
Who's 78?
Oh, hi, Unc.
We were talking about recordings, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Well, Leroy, why don't you get out your new recordings and play them for Wendy?
Oh, they're all over at her house. We could go over there.
Yes, why don't we?
Well, that won't be necessary. I have any number of records here.
Oh, groan.
Let's see. In a Monastery Garden. Yeah, that doesn't sound very lively.
Never mind, Unc.
Yeah, here we are. Here we are. I'm always chasing rainbows.
Is he kidding?
No, he isn't.
This is a favorite of Irene's and mine. Yeah, the sweetest music this side of heaven. Well, I'll leave you two alone now.
Good, Unc.
Go ahead and dance. You can't hurt the rug.
We couldn't possibly hurt it dancing to that tempo.
Hey, we're in luck. It hit a groove.
We'll have to take it off.
Gosh, it's too bad we don't have some of our own records.
Leroy!
Yeah, Unc?
If that side's no good, you can turn it over.
Thanks, Unc. We decided not to play records.
Oh? Well, I've been saving this little surprise for later, but...
More surprises?
Well, I borrowed Judge Hooker's movie projector, and we'll show some home movies.
Home movies?
Some of the stuff we took up at Honeysuckle Lodge that summer, Leroy. Yeah, I'll go fetch it.
Leroy, what's that expression your uncle uses when things go wrong?
You mean... He...
That's it.
He...
Won't have any more trouble with this reel. Sorry, I got the first one in backwards. Now, there's the bridge leading to Honeysuckle Lodge. And now we have a close-up of some honeysuckle. You see it? I shouldn't have tried to take it from the car, I guess. Oh, yes, yes, here we are unloading the car. Later on, you see us loading it again. A lot of interesting stuff in between. Oop, film broke. Pretty brittle after all these years. Turn on the lights, Leroy. Leroy, the lights. Confounded, Leroy, where are you?
Something wrong, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Bertie, will you please turn on the lights?
Yes, sir.
Leroy, if this is your idea of a joke...
There's nobody here.
Leroy, Wendy...
Look like Leroy's gone with the Wendy.
Youth. try to cooperate with a couple of youngsters and they disappear. You know, I'm just curious enough to want to know where they went and what they're up to. Kids their age going steady. I knew it would lead to no good. Say, there's Dinky's car tied to the lamppost in front of Peavy's. Wonder if Leroy's in there. Think I'll pull in and take a look. I don't know. If Leroy walks out in his own home movies, he must be pretty serious about this Wendy. Well, I gave him his chance. Hello, Peavy.
What can I do for you?
Look at the teenagers. Is Leroy here?
Yeah, he's back there. The kids have taken over the back booth.
Yeah, at least I know where he is. Peavy, why do you allow them to play music in your drugstore?
Well, they bring in the record player, and that brings in business. I may put in a jukebox.
Oh, my goodness. Look at them. They don't even realize I'm here.
Yeah, they're real gone, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Who's the girl splitting a soda with Leroy? It isn't Wendy.
No, she's another one of their crowd.
And I went out of my way to have them up home for dinner, thinking they wanted to be alone together.
Well, they do like to be alone together with their own group.
Yeah. I guess I worried too much about Leroy.
You old worrywart.
Come to think of it, that isn't bad music. Care to dance, Peavy?
No, I wouldn't say that.
The Great Gildersleeve will be back with us again in just 30 seconds.
Miss Gildersleeve, you seem pretty happy with the way things turned out with Leroy and Wendy.
Yeah, nothing to worry about, Bertie. In Peavy's last night, he was sharing a soda with another little girl. Not going steady. Even got his sweater back.
That's nice.
Well, I better go phone the office.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Yeah, okay, Mary Ellen. I'll walk you home right after school.
Uh-oh, Leroy's on the phone again.
What's up, Mary Ellen?
Mary Ellen, huh? Good, he's playing the field.
Well, sure you can wear my sweater, if the shoulders aren't too broad.
He's trapped again. Good night, folks.
By Willard Waterman and is an NBC Radio Network production. The show is written by John Elliott and Andy White and is transcribed. Included in the cast are Walter Tetley, William Randolph, Mary Lee Robb, Luana Patton, and Dick LeGrand. Musical compositions by Jack Meekin. This is John Heaston saying good night for the Kraft Foods Company, makers of the famous line of Kraft quality food products. Be sure to listen in next week and every week for the further adventures of the Great Gildersleeve.
Gildersleeve from January 20, 1954, and we are coming up on our Lux Radio Theater program in just a moment. Oh, once again, we need to remind you that you are listening to listener-supported non-commercial radio. Coming your way from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Radio Vault program in progress. We're into our second hour now. Lux Radio Theater is next. This time it is with Carol Perry.
Welcome to WHFR. My name is The Diva, and my show is on Saturdays from 5 to 8 p.m. It's called Lyrical Infusion with The Diva, but I'm nothing without you. Why don't you make a date with The Diva and come let me play just for you. Saturdays, 5 to 8 p.m., Lyrical Infusion with The Diva and you, 89.3 WHFR.FM.
Lux presents Hollywood. The Lux Radio Theater brings you the great Gildersleeve, Una Merkel, and Beulah Bondi in The Show Off. Ladies and gentlemen, your producer, Mr. Cecil B. DeMille.
Greetings from Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. The night Fibber McGee and Molly introduced a new character into their show called Gildersleeve, I'm sure no one could have foreseen the fantastic success story to which we add another chapter tonight. Mr. Gildersleeve made a great hit with Fibber and Molly's audience and soon had a radio program of his own. Then came a series of pictures at RKO. And tonight, we've cast him in one of the great comedy hits of the American theater. It's George Kelly's famous play, The Show Off. And to show off the great Gildersleeve in a proper setting, we've co-starred him with Una Merkel and Beulah Bondi. You'll find another name on Gildersleeve's birth certificate. Harold Perry, to be exact. But Mr. Perry has been swallowed up by Mr. Gildersleeve to the great enjoyment of the American people. In The Show Off, he plays Aubrey Piper, a gentleman with a talent for getting into trouble. Witness the case of his brother-in-law's invention, which you'll hear more about in just a moment. Some inventors are remembered by everyone. The names of others are lost in the fog of time. The airplane, the electric light, the wireless, any school child knows who was responsible for them. But nobody knows who invented the wheel or who invented soap. Yet someone did invent soap hundreds of years before it reached the level of perfection. But now the show goes on with The Show Off. And here's the first act, starring the great Gildersleeve as Aubrey Piper, Una Merkel as Amy, and Beulah Bondi as Mrs. Fisher. It's 8 o'clock on a Wednesday evening, and Amy Fisher is aflutter with excitement. 8 o'clock Wednesday is a big moment in Amy's life, for at 10 after... a certain party will ring the doorbell of the little frame house near Philadelphia. Hurriedly, she dabs a powder puff at her nose, and then, hearing the front door open, she rushes to the head of the stairs.
Mama? Mama, was that the door?
Yes, it was. It was your sister.
Oh. Mama, when the bell rings, let me answer it. Hello, Clara. How's Frank?
All right.
Mama, did you see my blue bar pin? It was in my drawer.
Well, look in the drawer. I haven't seen it.
What's all the excitement, Mama?
Wednesday night.
Oh. Is that fellow still coming here?
Oh, right on the dot,
such as he is.
It looks like a steady thing, Clara. You never in your life heard anybody talk so much. I don't know how Amy stands him.
Your pop can hardly stay in the room where he is.
Well, doesn't she take him into the parlor?
She does, yes, but you might just as well leave him out here, because he's not in there 5 minutes till he's out here in the kitchen again, talking about politics. You'd think he knew something about it. And the investment business. He's always talking about that, too. That's where he works, you know, the Billings Investment Company. He says he's head of the sales department. But I says to your brother Joe, I says, I don't know how he can be head of anything from the talk of him. Joe says he's a nut. But you don't dare say anything to Amy about him. Oh, no. She thinks he's heaven's gift to the Fisher family. And for all she knows about him, he could be a tramp in the park, said with the Billings Company.
Well, that's where he works, though, Mom.
How do you know?
Well, Frank knows him.
You're Frank?
Uh-huh. He says he eats his lunch at the same place, there at 15th and Arch.
And does he say he knows him?
Why, sure. He says he's seen him around there for a long time. Frank calls him Carnation Charlie. He says he's always got a big carnation in his buttonhole and carries a cane.
That's the one. He's always got it on when he comes here, too. I believe in my heart, Clara. That's what's turned your sister's head.
Oh,
did Frank say what his name was?
Aubrey Piper, I think.
That's it. Aubrey Piper. Sounds more like a place than a man's name. What does he do at Billings?
He's a clerk.
A clerk. I knew it. Head of the sales department.
Oh, Clara.
Oh, hello, Pop.
Well, has that nut arrived yet?
Not yet, but he will.
I hope to heaven he stays in the parlor tonight. I want to read my paper. And if he slaps me on the back once more, I'll kill him. That laugh of his. Enough to drive a man crazy. What's that?
Must be Joe. He's down the cellar trying to fix the radio. Joe? Is that you?
Yeah. Give me a hand with a set, will you, Pop?
I thought you was going to keep it downstairs.
There isn't enough light. Okay, thanks, Pop. Well, has that screwball come in yet?
Well, he certainly is a big hit with his family.
Laughing Louie. He's a first-class pest, that guy. Every time I'm working on something, he sticks his nose in it. What are you doing? What are you doing? You know that formula I've been working on to prevent rust? He got his nose into that the other night, too. Next time he does it, he's going to get socked.
Oh, there he is now. Amy?
Put out the light in here and shut the door. Maybe he'll think we've gone out.
Well, I've got to go.
Well, go out the back door if you don't want to be here all night.
Amy! Goodbye, Mom. Goodbye, Pop.
Goodbye. Be quiet now. If he hears a voice in here, he'll pop in here like a jumping jack.
Just a minute.
Aubrey. Hello, Aubrey.
Greetings on you, little girl. How's every little thing? Hitting on all three?
Come in, Aubrey.
Right on the job, Amy. 10 minutes past, on the dot. The pride of old West Philly never misses, no, sir.
I'll take your hat, Aubrey.
Anything to please the ladies. Here you are. And the boy rode off with many thanks and many a backward bow.
Oh, come on in the parlor, Aubrey.
One second, little gal. One little favor. Never again will I trouble the bell of old North Philly. How about a drink of the old Aqua Pura, huh? That's water to me.
Of course, Aubrey. I'll be right back. Make yourself comfortable.
Don't you worry about me, little gal.
Amy, shut that door. Well, what's the matter, Mom? I just want to get a drink of water for Aubrey.
Listen, Amy, I don't want that fellow popping in here.
Hi, good evening, ladies and gents.
Yeah. Oh.
Stay right where you are, folks, right where you are. Going right out on the next train. How are you, little mother? Evening, Pop. Hiya, Joe.
Hello.
Amy, step on the gas with the old Aqua Pura. Man's got to have a drink. How about it, Pop? You'll stay with me on that, eh, Pop?
Listen, I don't like to be slapped on the back.
Yes, sir. I want to tell you this is a very pretty little picture of domestic felicity. Father reading, mother knitting, and little old Joe Edison Fisher there working 18 hours a day to make the rich man richer and the poor man poorer. What about it, Popcorn? Am I right or raving?
Will you let me alone or keep your hands to yourself? I never saw such a pest in my life.
Well, what's the matter with Popsy Wopsy? Little off his feed, eh, Mother Fisher?
Here's your water, Aubrey.
Thank you, my dear. Blushing as she gave it, looking down at her feet so bare in her tattered gown. Yeah. How's that, Mother Fisher? Can't beat that little old Willie Shakespeare now, can you? No, sir, I'd like to tell the brothers that little old Shakespeare party shook a wicked spear. Well, here's laughter, ladies. And Mr. Marconi, my best regards to you. Very nice indeed. And a sweeter draught from a fairer hand was never quaffed.
Oh, you.
Well, Mr. Joseph, what are you doing? What are you doing, Joseph?
I am fixing something.
At it again, eh? The young inventor himself. Well, Mr. Joseph, I want to tell you, you're wasting your time. When you're all through, they'll offer you 20 cents for it and sell it for 20 million, take it or leave it, sign on the dotted line. Yes, sir. That's exactly what they did to little old yours truly here. 20 Lincoln Anacondas for a formula that would have solved the greatest problem before the industrial chemical world today.
What kind of a formula?
Why, a formula to prevent the rusting of iron and steel. A solution of vanadium and manganese to be added to the metal in its molten state instead of applied externally.
Where did you hear that?
Hear what, my boy?
About a rust preventative using vanadium and manganese.
Little idea of my own?
Yeah. You heard it right here in this room. I was talking about it last Sunday.
Oh, you thought of it too, eh? Well, just goes to show you, Joe, great minds run in the same...
Oh, shut up. You give me a swift pain.
I love that boy. Yes, Mother Fisher, that little boy of yours has got some great ideas. I was speaking to some of the men who work under me just the other day, Mother. I said, gentlemen, the inventive genius in this country is... Where are you going, Mother?
I got a touch of the same pain. Good night.
Must be an epidemic around here.
Aubrey, let's go in the parlor, shall we?
Yeah. You know, Amy, sometimes I get a funny feeling that your folks don't like me. Many brave hearts are asleep in the deep, so beware. A little high, I guess.
Yes, Mother, do you want something?
I just wanted to tell you that it's nearly 12 o'clock. We're all going to bed around here.
I was just about to take my reluctant leave, little Mother.
Well, I don't want to hurry you.
Not at all. In fact, the recent outburst was in the nature of a farewell concert. The little old song of twilight, you know, Mother Fisher, to soothe the savage beast. Yeah.
Come on, Aubrey. I'll walk to the gate with you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It's a beautiful night, all right.
Oh, isn't it?
Look at that moon up there, Amy. Mm. Is that a moon or is that a moon? I say it's a moon.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah. You know, it's times like this when a man gets to thinking, Amy.
Does he, Aubrey?
Yes, sir. That old moon up there makes you think a lot of things. A man's got to be pretty careful.
Oh.
But when a man's knocked around the world like I have, a man gets pretty wise. When a man meets the right girl, a man knows he's met the right girl. Do you follow me?
I think so, Aubrey.
Amy, do you think a married couple can be happy on $100 a week?
Oh, Aubrey, yes, I do.
Be nice if they had it, too.
Aubrey, is that how much you...
Well, more or less. Right now, it's a little less. But I'm thinking of putting over a deal, Amy, just between us two, you know.
I don't think it makes any difference how much a man makes. I think when a girl cares for a man, loves a man, that's all that counts. The only important thing in the world, or should be, even if he doesn't have a dime, don't you?
Well, I got two nickels.
No. I mean, don't you think about love?
Oh, sure. Ever since I was 14, Amy. Yes, sir. It's a little old Cupid's dart that counts.
And after all, you can't buy happiness, can you?
Definitely not, so they say. Well?
Well?
Amy, what do you think, huh?
Yeah,
what do you say? Is it a go? Say yes, Amy. Say you'll pool your coffee ration with me.
Aubrey, you mean will I marry you?
That's the general thought I'm trying to convey.
Oh, Aubrey, yes, I will, Aubrey, any time you say.
Amy. Amy Piper. Oh.
going to let you do it. I won't stand for it.
Oh, Mama, stop it. I'm going to marry him, and that's all there is to it.
But you don't even know him. You don't know what he does or how much he makes or anything about him.
I don't have to. I know I like him, and that's enough.
All right. But remember this, Amy. Be sure that he keeps you, and you keep him. And don't be coming around here for your pop to keep you.
Mama, don't make me laugh. Aubrey's got a wonderful position. He makes plenty of money.
Who says so?
I just know from the way he talks. He makes at least $100 a week.
Who ever heard of a clerk making $100 a week?
A clerk? Where did you hear that?
From Frank Hyland.
What does Frank Hyland know about it?
He knows Aubrey Piper. And Frank says he's a clerk down there just like 5 million others.
Oh, that just shows how much he knows about it. Aubrey told me he makes $100 a week. And what's more, he's going to swing a great big deal pretty soon.
The only thing he'll ever swing is that cane he carries. Amy, dear, I'm warning you once and for all.
Oh, Mama, why don't you let me make my own life? You took who you wanted, didn't you? And Clara took the man she wanted. Well, I'm going to take what I want, and I want Aubrey Piper.
So you'd like a raise, eh, Piper?
Well, that's the general idea I was trying to convey, Mr. Williams.
What for?
Well, the way I figured is this. A man's going to get married. Well, when a man gets married, he's got to have enough to support a wife, right?
Right.
And I figure about $100 a week, maybe a little more.
How much do you make now, Piper?
35. Not very much, Mr. Williams.
No, it isn't. But this investment business isn't what it used to be either.
Yes, sir, but...
35 is all you're worth, Piper.
But, Mr. Williams...
From what I've seen of your ability, it's more than you're worth.
Yes, sir.
Now, would you like 35 or nothing at all?
No, sir.
What makes you think you're entitled to a raise?
Well, I...
You don't have to get married, do you?
No, sir.
Then put it off for a while.
Yes, sir, but I...
That's all, Piper. That's all. Goodbye.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Hey, Piper.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Huh? Look, how did it go? Where did you get the raise?
Oh, the raise. Oh, yes. We talked it over, the boss and I. He's going to sleep on it. I hope he has nightmares.
Oh, gee, pretty lucky, Piper.
Well, there's nothing to it if you got the right approach, Fred. I got in a good word for you, too.
Yeah? Oh, gee, thanks.
Well, I'll go to lunch now. Got to feed the old furnace, you know. See you around, Fred.
Yeah.
What'll it be?
Hi, Sam. I'll have a ham on rye and a chocolate frosting. And don't spare the ice cream, Sam.
2 scoops?
Oh, 2 scoops, sure. What do I care?
That's a nickel extra, Aubrey.
Slap it in there, Sam. You know Piper, the old sport himself.
Sure. One ham on, one frosted. Scoop it double.
Aubrey.
Amy, what are you doing way down here?
Aubrey, I have to speak to you.
Say, I'm glad you came, Amy. You know that deal I was talking about? Well, it didn't go through, honey. I mean...
Aubrey, listen.
So I was just thinking maybe if we could postpone getting married...
Aubrey, I've got to tell you, darling, it's awfully important. I've done it, Aubrey.
Huh? Done what?
I've done it. I've left home.
You left... Oh.
Oh, I just had to. I couldn't stand it anymore, and I just told Mama. I said, I'm leaving, Mama, and that's that.
You told Mama, huh? Oh. Well, I was just going to tell you, Amy, that deal, I mean... Where are you going to live?
I don't know. I haven't even thought about it. I've burned my bridges, Aubrey.
You burned mine, too. Oh, well, I guess we better get married pretty soon then, huh?
Oh, Aubrey, do you suppose we could?
Oh, sure. You just leave everything to me.
Oh, Aubrey, that'd be wonderful. And it doesn't really make any difference, does it? I mean, we were going to be married anyway, and, well, you make so much money and all, and... Oh, Aubrey, tell me it's all right.
Oh, it's fine, Amy, it's fine. Just a minute. Hey, Samuel! Samuel!
Yeah?
Cancel that extra scoop, will you?
Act Two of The Show-Off, starring the great Gildersleeve as Aubrey Piper, Beulah Bondi as Mrs. Fisher, and Una Merkel as Amy. Six months have passed, and the romance of Amy and Aubrey has blossomed into marriage. Amy is too proud to admit it to her family, Piper. She has discovered, as wives sometimes do, that her mate is more talk than action. He's not the head of his department, nor does he earn the expected $100 per week. And now, in the Piper kitchenette, the financial question has again reared its ugly head.
Bills, bills, bills. Aubrey, what are we going to do?
How's the coffee coming along, Amy? Boy, can't be late to work, you know.
Aubrey, listen to me.
Sure, what's on your mind?
Aubrey, we've just got to get some money. We can't go on like this any longer.
Why not? We've been getting along fine.
Have we? Look at this. We owe $30 to the butcher, $23 to the grocer, $8.10 to the milkman, and the janitor was here about the rent again.
I'll speak to him on the way out.
On your way out is right. He's going to throw us out Friday.
You mean he's threatened us? Why, he can't get away with that. I'll break the lease. That's what I'll do. How about a piece of toast, honey?
Aubrey, he can get away with it. We've got to pay up or get out.
All right, we'll get out. I never liked this place anyway. The bathtub gurgles. Have you got any peanut butter?
Aubrey, how can I make you understand?
Listen, honey, do me a favor, will you? Forget about it. Everything's going to be fine.
Is it? How?
You just keep your eye on the boy from West Philly, that's all. Now, I didn't want to mention this, but I'm working on a deal right now that'll put us right up there on top. Where's the jelly?
What kind of a deal, Aubrey?
Never mind, you'll see.
But I want to know.
Well, it's a little idea I've had in the back of my head for a long time.
What idea?
It's pretty technical, Amy.
Aubrey, tell me, what is it?
Well, it's a rust preventative. A combination of magnesium and vanadium added.
Oh, Aubrey, that's Joe's idea. That's the thing he's been working on for years.
Oh, beat me to it, eh? Well, the more power to him.
Oh, Aubrey.
Ah, good evening to you one and all. Hello, Mother Fisher.
Oh, hello. It's you, is it?
What's the good word, Mother? Been siphoning out any gas tanks lately? Where's Amy? Is she here?
No, ain't she home?
No, I just came by there.
Well, she ain't been here today.
Yeah, she was saying this morning she thought she'd go out and look for a house today. I suppose she hasn't got back yet. I wanted to take her to the movies. I got the loan of Harry Albright's car.
Did you say she was out looking for a house?
Yeah, we got to get out of that place we're in. The Acme Machine people have bought the whole block. They're going to put up a new factory there.
How soon do you have to get out?
Friday. I mean, as soon as we can find another place.
Well, I'm afraid you won't find it so easy to get a place as reasonable as that again in a hurry.
I don't want a place as reasonable as that. I want a real home, Mamma Mia. Something with ground around it. Or I can do a bit of tennis in the evening.
Well, if you do, you'll pay for it.
That's exactly what I expect to do, Mother Fisher. Not giving you a short answer, of course. That's exactly what I expect to do. And no more of the old first-of-the-month business for this growing boy. He's all washed up, signed on the dotted line. I'm going to buy, Mother.
Buy? Buy what?
A house, Mother Fisher. A real little home. You ought to go out along the boulevard some Sunday. Some fine little buys out there.
Well, there's no danger of your going out along the boulevard except for a walk.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people out that way, Mother. And a man's got to live someplace.
Well, if he's wise, he'll live where he's able to pay for it. Besides, you haven't got any furniture for a house, unless you don't mind sitting on the floor.
The matter of furniture nowadays, little Mother, is a very inconsequential item.
It still costs money, don't it?
Money, money. That's something that never worries me.
I know, but it worries me.
Yeah.
How are you going to buy furniture when you haven't got any money to even buy a house?
Don't fret, Mater. There's things in the wind. Things in the wind.
Well, there ought to be. There's plenty of it.
Plenty of what, Mother?
Plenty of wind.
Yeah. Right there with the old sense of humor, eh? Well, I guess I'll mooch along.
Yes, mooch.
Oh, say. If Amy calls, tell her I got the loan of Harry Albright's car. Fred Myers and I will meet her in front of the Rivoli at 8 bells.
I suppose you mean 8 o'clock, don't you?
Give the lady a cigar, Professor. Well, cheerio, Mrs. Whistler.
Who?
Mrs. Whistler. Man's dream of an ideal mother.
Oh, shut up, you fool. Go on, mooch.
Yeah. Cheerio, gal. Many brave hearts are asleep in the deep.
So... Hello, Aubrey.
Well, well, Jojo the dog-faced boy. How's the lad?
I'm okay, fine.
What's the matter, Joe? You look excited.
Well, I am, in a way. Look, Aubrey, can you keep your mouth shut about something?
You can trust me, Jose. Sphinx Piper, my friends call me.
What?
Sphinx, Sphinx.
Oh.
Well, Joe, what's the big secret?
Well,
I sold it.
Sold it? Sold what?
My invention, the rust preventative.
No.
Yeah. I was down at the Miller Grant office all day. I went over the whole thing with him, and we're going to tie it all up Monday morning.
Nice work, Mr. Joseph. I hope you got yourself a good slice of the old moolah.
I think it's all right. They're going to give me $50,000 for it.
Well, not bad, not bad. First offer, I suppose.
First and last, I'm grabbing it.
Don't be a sucker, Joe. Give them the old hard-to-get treatment. They'll come through with twice that.
Oh, no, this is too good to fool around with. Anyway, I'm satisfied. You know, we can do a lot with that money.
We certainly can.
I was talking about the family.
Oh, the family, yes, of course, that's what I meant. But I still think you could get more, Joe. What you need is somebody to go in there and talk to those guys.
Cut it out, will you? I'm satisfied. I'm sorry I mentioned it to you at all.
Hey, Aubrey, what do you say?
Right there, Fred. Well, best of luck, Joe, my boy.
Don't forget now. Don't say anything about it.
Mum's the word, Joe. Mum's the word.
I thought you said you knew how to drive.
What's the matter, Fred? We're getting there, aren't we?
Yeah, but I hate to think what Harry's car's going to be like.
Don't you worry about the car, Fred. Everything's under control.
Yeah, so I hear.
Got a slipping clutch, that's what it is.
Hey, that's a red light. You better stop. Oh, boy, Aubrey. You're about the world's worst. I think I better get out and walk.
Oh, we'll be there any minute. Just let that little old light give me the go-ahead, Fred, and we'll be zipping on our way. Here we go.
Hey, what?
What's the matter?
Look out for that car. Look out. Look out.
Did you see that guy? He cut right in front of me.
Listen, Aubrey, that was a police car.
A what?
A police car. You slammed right into a police car.
All right,
keep moving there. Moving on. Hey, you.
Good evening, officer. Had a little brush here. Nothing serious, I hope, eh?
Oh, no. You just knocked three of our wheels off, that's all.
I'd like to take a sock at that dope. Where is
it? Take it easy, Mike. You go along and have that arm fixed. I'll take care of this fella. Go along now.
All right, but you better report about the car.
Don't worry, Mike.
Did that other gendarme get hurt?
Oh, no. I think it's just a little matter of a broken arm. Nothing serious, as you say. A
broken arm? Well, how did that happen?
I'm not sure, but I think he was waving to a friend. He threw it out of joint.
Very good.
All right, let's see your license.
License? Oh, you mean my driver's license.
You know what I mean.
Sure. Let me see now. That's not it. That's not it. Oh, my draft card. 4PH.
PH?
Positively hopeless.
They ain't kidding either.
Yeah, you got me that time. Now, let's see.
Come on. Give me your license.
Well, officer, I'll tell you the truth. You beat me to it by 3 days.
What are you talking about?
Well, I've been meaning to get a license for some time. As a matter of fact, I was going down there for one next Tuesday.
Just a minute. Am I hearing things? Are you trying to tell me that you don't have a license?
You got me again, officer.
I've got you, all right. Get out of that car.
No, wait a minute.
I can't understand it. I waited at the movies for over an hour. If he wasn't going to come, he would have called here, wouldn't he?
Don't ask me what he'd do.
I'm beginning to get worried.
He says you've got to get out of that place you're in.
Yes, that's what I was doing today, looking around for something.
Did you see anything?
Oh, I saw a couple of places that were fair, but they want too much money.
You're not really looking for a house, are you, Amy?
Yes, if I can find one. Aubrey says he will not live in rooms any longer, and he doesn't want to pay rent. He wants to buy.
Amy, I thought you had a little sense, but you're nearly as bad as him.
You talk awfully silly, Mother. You'd think everybody that was married was living out in the street.
Well, that's where a good many of them would be living, Amy, only that somebody belonging to them is giving them a hand. You're everlasting borrowing as it is.
Well, I always pay it back, don't I?
Yeah, you do when you get it, but that's not the point, Amy. It's that what you get one week don't last you till the next.
Oh, Mother, let me alone. If you're trying to make me say I'm sorry I married Aubrey, well, I'm not. I'm glad
glad I married him, and I wouldn't change him for anyone else I ever met in my life. So there.
All right, Amy, but someday that man's going to bring trouble on us. I can feel it in my bones.
He won't bring trouble. And if he does, it'll be between him and me. You don't have to worry.
All right, Amy. Is that you, Joe?
It's me, Mom.
Oh, hello, Clara. What you doing here?
Well, I don't know. Isn't Frank here?
You're Frank?
He called up the house and said I'd better get right over here. It was something about Aubrey.
What about Aubrey?
Well, I don't know. I couldn't understand what he was saying. Oh, I hear you moving, Amy.
Yes, we are. We want a house.
A house? Oh, Amy, if you can't pay your rent where you are, how do you expect to pay more?
How do you know I'm not able to pay my rent where I am?
Now, don't you start a fight, Amy.
Oh, but I'd just like to know what business it is of hers, whether I can pay my rent or not. Nobody's asking her to pay it.
Oh, no? Well, your husband's been to Frank Highland twice already to pay it.
What?
That's a lie.
It is not. He's asked him twice and got it, too. Till I put a stop to it.
Mama, make her take that back.
I won't. It's true.
Now, you hush up, both of you. I guess if Clara says it's true, Amy, she must know. And it just goes to prove what I said.
Oh, let me alone.
I told her. I told her that man would start trouble. Well, now, who should arrive?
Oh, buenas noches, little mother. Is Amy here?
For land's sake, what's happened to you? What's that bandage on your head?
Bandage? Oh, yes. Nothing to get upset about. Beginning to rain outside, Mother.
Never mind the rain. The rain didn't do that to you. I guess you ran into somebody, didn't you?
Don't get excited, Mama. Just a little misunderstanding on the part of the traffic officer.
You don't mean to tell me that you ran into a traffic officer.
Control now, little Mother. I assure you there's no occasion for undue solicitation. Good evening, Clara.
What happened to your head?
The veriest trifle, Mrs. Highland. Just a little spray from the windshield.
Where's that car you borrowed? Smashed, I guess, ain't it?
The car I borrowed, Mother Fisher, is now in the hands of the bandits of the law. The judicial gentlemen who collect fines from motorists by ordering them to go one way and then swearing they told them to go another.
Never mind your fancy talk. I want to know who you killed and where's the automobile that someone was fool enough to lend you.
The automobile, little mother, is perfectly safe, parked and pasturing in the courtyard of the police station.
So you got arrested?
Well, I accompanied the officer as far as the station house, yes. And while I was there, I told them a few things about the condition of traffic in this city.
I guess they told you a few things, too, didn't they?
Repeat the question, please.
Oh, shut up.
Yes.
What did they do? Fine you?
Well, they were all set to fine me. When I got through with them, they didn't have a leg to stand on. So they trumped up a charge of driving an automobile without a license.
Did they take the automobile away from you?
Nothing of the sort. They simply complied with the usual procedure in a case of this kind, which is to release the defendant on bond pending the extent of the victim's injuries.
So there was somebody injured?
The traffic cop that ran into me.
For heaven's sake, couldn't you find anybody but a traffic cop to run into?
I didn't run into him, Mother. You don't understand the circumstances of the case.
Well, I understand this much. They can give you 10 years for a thing like that, and it'd just serve you right if they did, too. Borrowing people's automobiles and knowing no more about running them than I do.
No time like the present to learn, Mother.
Well, you'll have plenty of time from now on if that officer's seriously injured.
He was faking a broken arm around there when I left.
Oh.
It's a wonder to me the poor goof wasn't signed on the dotted line. He ran head on right into me.
Did they take the cop to the hospital?
I believe they did.
Oh, Aubrey,
what happened to you?
Well, a little woman herself. Hi, Amy.
What is it, Aubrey?
Nothing in the world, baby. I had a little mix-up on Broad and Erie Avenue.
You didn't get hurt, did you?
Nothing but a scratch on the medulla oblongata. Just a little shake-up.
He nearly killed a traffic officer. That's how much of a shake-up it was.
You didn't, Aubrey, did you?
Certainly not, Amy. Your mother's raving.
The man's in the hospital. I don't know what more you want.
Is he, Aubrey?
Do you think I'd be here if he was?
You wouldn't be here only that someone was fool enough to bail you out instead of letting you stay there where you couldn't be killing people.
Are you out on bail, Aubrey?
They always bail a man in a case like this, Amy. They got my car on their hands. I just got to call around for it Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock.
I guess you just got to go down there to a hearing Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock and pay your fine. I guess that's the automobile you've got to call for.
How much did they fine you, Aubrey?
They didn't fine me at all.
They'll do that Tuesday.
Yeah, time will tell that, Mother Fisher.
How much bail did they put you under, Aubrey?
1,000 berries, Amy.
$1,000?
That's regulation. Little chicken feed for the stool pigeons.
Did you say a
$1,000.
That's what I said, Mother Fisher. 1,000 trifles. I wouldn't kid you.
You wouldn't kid anybody that listened to you for 5 minutes. And who did you get to go $1,000 bail for you?
Don't be alarmed, little mother. I saw that the affair was kept strictly within the family.
What do you mean?
Your other son-in-law was kind enough to come forward.
Do you mean my husband?
That's the gentleman, Clara, Mr. Francis X. Hyland.
Don't you think you'd better go to bed?
In a minute. I'm thinking, Amy.
Is your head hurting you?
I'm not thinking that hard. Besides, it's just a couple of little scratches.
Aubrey, what do you think they'll do to you down there Tuesday?
Now, don't worry about that, sweetie.
Oh, but they're getting awfully strict. What if that traffic cop is hurt bad?
Oh, it'll only be a fine for reckless driving, even if they could prove it was reckless driving. Then I can prove it was the officer's fault. So they'll be very likely apologizing to me around there Tuesday morning instead of fining me.
Oh, I wouldn't care if they only fined you, Aubrey, because I could go back to work until it was paid.
You'll never go back to work, kid, while I'm on the boat.
I wouldn't mind it, Aubrey.
Not while you're my wife, Amy. I'm the provider around here.
You don't think they might do anything else to you, do you, Aubrey?
Oh, they might try to take away my license.
You haven't got a license, have you?
That's where I fooled them.
Aubrey, what is it they send them to prison for?
Look, Amy, everything's okay. I've got the whole thing worked out in my mind right now. All I've got to do is pay that little old fine, and I'm as free as the air. Why, it's a cinch.
How much will the fine be?
Well, I can't tell. Maybe that $1,000.
$1,000? Where'll you get $1,000?
Now, stop it. Stop it, honey. Look, I'll have that $1,000 Monday. It's a breeze.
$1,000 Monday?
Sure.
How?
Look, if a fellow was going to sell something for $10, see?
Yes.
And I knew it was worth at least $20, see? Well, if I went to the men who were going to buy it for $10 and I convinced them they ought to pay $20, well, I'd be entitled to a commission now, wouldn't I? At least 2%. 2% of the difference, sign on the dotted line, and I got my $1,000.
But, Aubrey, that would mean that you'd have to sell something for $100,000.
That's the ticket, Amy.
You mean that somebody's selling something for $50,000 and that you can get $100,000 for it?
Amy, it's a cinch. Well, what do you say, little lady? Mr. Miller, ready to see me yet?
Let's see now. You're Mr. Piper, aren't you?
That's the name, little lady. Just tell him I'm here about Mr. Fisher's invention.
Oh, I told him that already, Mr. Piper.
Oh, thank you, little lady. I don't know what I'd do without you.
Oh, you go on.
No, you go on.
Miss Gray?
Yes, Mr. Miller.
I'll see Mr. Piper now.
Yes, sir. That door over there, Mr. Piper.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Many brave hearts are asleep in the deep, so be. Good morning, Mr. Miller.
Morning, come in.
Piper's the name, Aubrey Piper.
How do you do? Sit down.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. I've come to see you about the rust preventative.
So I hear. Well, where's Mr. Fisher? He was going to be here at 11 to sign the papers.
So I came at 10. The signing of the papers can wait, I think.
Oh? Are you an interested party in this deal, Mr. Piper?
Well, slightly, yes. I'm Mr. Fisher's business advisor.
Oh, I see. Well, he's a fortunate young man.
Oh, very fortunate. And that's what I like to see, Mr. Miller. A young man getting someplace, pulling himself up by the seat of his pants. Yes, Mr. Miller, it's the American inventive genius that's put this country where it is today. And I'm here to state that every right-thinking citizen has the duty, no sir, the privilege, of doing everything in their power to help the growing boy along. Am I right or wrong? Shake it up, brother. Shake it up.
Just a moment, please.
Yes. Now, let's not beat around the bush. I'm a man of a few words, Mr. Miller, and I can see that you are, too. Now, what I like to do is come straight to the point, sign on the dotted line, wrap it up, and take it away. Now, you know what this boy has done? Just one little idea, you say. One simple operation. That's true, Mr. Miller, but we can't pass it off like that. Oh, no. Now, you're a businessman, Mr. Miller. Your time is valuable, and so is mine. So let's settle right down now here.
Just what are you talking about?
Mr. Fisher's invention. What else?
Well, you're a little late. We went all over this with Mr. Fisher last week. We're giving him $50,000 for it this morning.
Now you've hit it, Mr. Miller. Right on the old button. $50,000. A paltry, measly, contemptible... Shame on you, Mr. Miller.
What's that?
Think of it. Put yourself in this boy's place.
$50,000 is a very fair price.
Not for genius, Mr. Miller. Genius is priceless. And I'm here to say...
Wait, please. I might understand that you'd like to call this deal off.
Now, Mr. Miller, don't you jump to conclusions. We want you to have this invention, but at a fair price.
All right, Mr. Piper, let's have your proposition.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. In the first place, we want $100,000 on the line as an advance.
Oh, really?
A check will do, but cash won't hurt. Number two... The Miller Grant Company will have to sell it at their own expense.
I see.
And number three, we want one half the net on every gallon sold as a royalty. There you are, Mr. Miller. That's our proposition, and a fairer one you couldn't find. Am I right or wrong? Shake it up, brother. Shake it up.
Mr. Piper, I'm afraid you're wrong.
Yeah.
Huh? I said you're wrong.
Now listen here.
I'll do the talking now. Who do you think you are walking in here trying to bulldoze me out of $50,000? We made a fair price, and we were ready to stand by it. But I don't like the way you do business, Mr. Piper. And you can go back and tell Mr. Fisher that he can thank you for this deal falling through.
Now, what was that?
The deal is off. We won't give you a lead nickel.
Now, wait.
I'm sorry, Mr. Piper. Good morning.
But you can't do this.
Oh, yes, I can. There were no papers signed, and there won't be any papers signed. Now get out.
Mr. Miller, you're making a terrible mistake.
Will you please get out?
Now, let's be reasonable, huh? We'll come down a little bit. Make it 75,000.
I told you I wouldn't...
Make it 60.
No.
55.
No.
53.
No.
52.
No.
51.
No.
You're a hard man, Mr. Miller.
And just for that, we won't sell it to you at all. We'll take our product elsewhere. And you'll regret this to the end of your days. Just remember, whenever you hear the Fisher-Piper process, that you could have been in on the ground floor, and you missed your chance.
Good morning, sir. Oh, this is one of my bad days.
We pause now for station identification. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System. Mr. DeMille returns to the microphone.
Now the curtain rises on the third act of the show-off, starring the great Gildersleeve, Una Merkel, and Beulah Bondi. It's the morning of Aubrey's trial. In the corridor just off the courtroom, the luckless show-off stands cracking his knuckles with nervousness. For the first time in his life, Aubrey is scared. With him is his benefactor, a sad-faced, sad-eyed man, his brother-in-law, Frank Hyland.
Now take it easy, Aubrey. Don't try to tell the judge his business. If he finds you, just keep your mouth shut. I'll take care of whatever it costs.
Gee, Frank, certainly a swell of you to stick by me like this.
Oh, it's just all right.
If I can ever do anything for you, just tip me off.
Yeah. Things certainly have been going awful lately. Did you hear about Joe?
Joe? No. What's the matter with Joe?
He had a deal all set for $50,000 for his invention. Went down there yesterday and they wouldn't even see him.
Well, what do you know? No explanation or anything.
No?
Whew. Well, just goes to show you. You can't trust those fellas as far as you can throw them.
Yeah. Wish I knew what gummed it up.
So do I.
Aubrey.
Oh, hello, Amy. Glad you got here, kid.
Hello, Frank.
Hello. Well, I'll see you later. I gotta get some coffee.
No refills, Frank. See you in court. Well, honey.
Aubrey, are you nervous?
Nervous? Who, me? Yeah.
Oh, Aubrey, don't worry. It'll come out all right.
It's not only the trial, Amy. That isn't so much. I got something else on my mind, Amy. I've just discovered I'm a terrible heel.
Aubrey!
That's right. It's an awful blow to me after all these years.
What are you talking about?
Amy, listen. Remember that deal I was going to swing? That $100,000 thing?
Yes.
It didn't go through.
Oh, that's all right.
I hope Joe feels like that.
Joe?
Yeah, it was his deal, the invention. I crabbed it for him.
Oh, Aubrey.
All right, go ahead. Give it to me. I deserve anything I can get.
But how did it happen? How? It was all settled.
Well, yes, but I went there to talk for Joe.
Oh.
I thought I could bluff him into it, Amy, and instead of that, they bluffed me out. I was only trying to do a good turn, that's all.
I guess you can't help it, Aubrey. I guess it's just the way you're built or something.
Oh, honey, from now on, it's going to be different. I'm going to be a brand new heel. A man, you wait and see.
Well, what are you going to tell Joe?
Joe? Oh, you think I ought to tell him, huh?
You've got to tell him. You've got to take your medicine, Aubrey.
All right. I'll face him. I'll face him like a man. Joe, I'll say, Joe, my boy, I'd rather face my draft board.
Well, when the trial's over, we'll go up to the house, both of us.
Okay, Amy.
Of course, that's just assuming that they'll let you out after the trial.
Aubrey Piper.
Yes, here I am. Who wants me, mister?
The state of Pennsylvania. Get in here.
Oh, brother.
Here it is. Look, Clara, it's in the papers already.
About Aubrey?
You'd know it was about Aubrey if they didn't even mention his name.
Oh, what's it say?
Mad motorist fined $1,000.
That's him, all right. I suppose Frank had to pay it, too.
Aubrey Piper of 903 Lehigh Avenue was arraigned today before Magistrate Lister to answer to the charges of reckless driving, injuring a traffic officer, and operating an automobile without a license. Magistrate Lister heard a plea of leniency and fined the defendant $1,000. Look, there's his picture.
Aubrey's picture?
Oh, carnation and all. I'd like to get my hands on that fool. I'd tell him a thing or two. Disgracing the whole family.
Well, here's your chance.
Oh, hi, Clarabelle.
Come on in. Hello, Amy.
Hello.
Well, it's all over. The said and done. Sign on the dotted line. Greetings, Mother Fisher. You're looking very beautiful this afternoon. Pretty as a gangster's mall. Yes, sir.
Shut up.
What's the matter, Mother?
What'd they do to him, Amy?
Oh, nothing much.
I'll tell you what they tried to do.
You keep quiet. Nobody wants to hear what you've got to say about it at all.
Well, I told them down there what I had to say about it, whether they wanted to hear it or not. I told them plenty.
And then they fined you, didn't they?
A little.
Yes, they fined you $1,000. It's all right here in the paper. Mad motorist fined $1,000.
Is that what they called me? Why, I'll sue them. Let me see that. Not a bad picture, is it?
Oh, give me that paper. What do you want to do? Put it in your scrapbook?
Oh, Mama, let's not fight about it. We're in trouble enough right now. Let's forget it.
Oh, sure, forget it.
Is Joe here, Mama?
No, he ain't.
Well, Aubrey wants to see him about something when he comes. Then we're going home. I'll go make a cup of tea.
Nothing for me, Amy. I couldn't eat a thing.
Who asked you to?
All right, Mother, all right.
Is that you, Pa?
It's me, Mom.
Oh, come in. You've got company.
Who is it? Oh, hello, Aubrey.
Oh, hi, Joe.
How'd you make out today, Aubrey?
Well, I'll tell you.
They find him. He's lucky he isn't in the hooskow right now.
Oh, that's too bad.
Joe, listen, I got to speak to you about something.
Not now, Aubrey. I'm pretty busy.
Yeah, but it's very important, Joe.
What could you have to say that's important? You know who he is, don't you, Joe? He's the mad motorist.
You cut it out, Mother.
What is it, Mom?
Right here in the paper, look. I never thought I'd live to see a thing like this happen.
You know, there's something else in tonight's paper, Mom.
What?
Just cast your eyes on this right here.
Well, what is it?
Philadelphia youth makes important chemical discovery. Mr. Joseph Fisher of North Philadelphia perfects rust preventative solution. How do you like that?
Joe, did they buy that thing from you?
$100,000, Mother. They signed for it this afternoon in the lawyer's office.
What,
Joe? Oh, Joe, that's wonderful. Oh, I'll go tell Amy.
Wait a minute. What is all this?
Here, read it.
Joe, I can't believe it.
Let me see that thing.
They sent for me to come over there this afternoon about 2 o'clock, and they had their contracts all drawn up and everything.
Oh, what did you say about $100,000, Joe? Well,
that's what they paid for it this afternoon on account. Then they're to market it for me from their laboratories and give me half the net.
Net? What's the net?
Whatever's left after all expenses are paid.
But did they give you any of the money, Joe?
$100,000, sure.
Not in money, though.
Oh, not in dollar bills, no. They gave me a check for it. Well, Aubrey, what do you say?
Not bad, not bad. I guess we put it over, eh, Jose?
What do you mean, we?
Yes, what do you mean, we? Who cut you in on this?
Now, Mother, you never know.
Oh, shut up.
You know, it was a funny thing, Mom. When I first talked to the Miller Grant people, I was only to get $50,000 advance. Then they called it all off.
But today they sent for me and said, okay, you win $100,000.
And they're getting away with manslaughter at that.
Keep still, you. You don't know anything about this at all.
I made them think I knew something about it.
You made who think?
The Miller Grant people.
What are you talking about, Aubrey? Do you know?
Certainly I know what I'm talking about. I went to see those people yesterday.
And what did you do up there?
Well, I told them they'd have to double the advance if they wanted to do business with us.
And what business was it of yours?
Well, I'm Joe's relative, ain't I?
Who told you you were?
Well, he's got to have somebody tend to his business, doesn't he, Mother? He's only a lad.
He doesn't need you to tend to his business for him. He tended to his business long before he ever saw you.
He never landed $100,000, though, Mother, till he saw me, did he?
Well, what did you say to them, Aubrey?
Well, Joe, I simply told him I was acting in the capacity of business advisor to you. And that if this discovery of yours was as important as you led me to believe it was, they were simply taking advantage of your youth by offering you $50,000 for it. And that I refused to allow you to negotiate further unless they doubled the advance, sold it at their expense, and gave us one half the net signed on the dotted line.
Holy smokes.
I don't believe it.
Well, I certainly have to give you credit, Aubrey. That's the way the contract reads.
I told it to him all right from the shoulder. Yes, sir.
Well, I'll have to give you a little present of some kind out of this, Aubrey.
You'll not give me any present, Jose. Give it to your family. They'll need it more than I will.
Joe, is it true what Clara said?
Sure it is. Here's the paper.
Oh, Joe!
But Aubrey gets half the credit. He swung the deal for double the money.
Aubrey, oh, Aubrey, it's wonderful, darling. You're wonderful. Everything's wonderful.
Nothing at all, Amy. Nothing at all.
Do you want some tea, Aubrey?
Tea? Yes, I might, Clara.
And a sandwich. I'll fix you something, Aubrey.
Sure, anything he wants, eh, Aubrey?
Well, thanks, folks. Can I help, Amy?
No. You just sit down there, Aubrey, and rest.
Rest? Oh, thank you. Oh, Amy, that newspaper there. Just hand me the financial page, will you?
Heaven, help me from now on.
Ladies and gentlemen, next Sunday is the beginning of Boy Scout Week. This year marks the 33rd birthday of scouting in this nation, a third of a century of service. Every Boy Scout is working for his country now, helping to win the war. And tonight we join millions of other Americans in saluting their great work. Our sponsors, the makers of Lux Toilet Soap, join me in inviting you to be with us again next Monday night when the Lux Radio Theater presents Edward G. Robinson, Gail Patrick, and Laird Krieger in The Maltese Falcon. This is Cecil B. DeMille saying good night to you from Hollywood.
Great Gildersleeve appeared tonight through the courtesy of the Kraft Cheese Company. Beulah Bondi will soon be seen in the Warner Brothers picture Watch on the Rhine, starring Betty Davis. Heard in tonight's play were Paula Winslow as Clara, Jeff Corey as Joe, and Eddie Marr, Norman Field, Leo Cleary, Charles Kane, Arthur Q. Bryan, Ken Christie, Sharon Douglas, and Fred Mackay. Our music was directed by Louis Silvers.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The many sounds, the many faces of jazz and improvised music can be heard on the Spirits Rejoice radio program every Tuesday from 6 to 10 p.m. right here, WHFR.FM, WHFR Dearborn.
Time out.
All right. Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the MHSAA and the Michigan Interscholastic Athletic Administrators Association.
All right, there we go. Great Gildersleeve there from the Lux Radio Theater from February 1st, 1943. Of course, that was when Harold Perry, the original Gildersleeve, played the role in the movie as well. We're gonna make way for Jack Benny in just a little bit.
Queen's Focus Group is a social network that challenges the perspectives related to the academics of Black students. It is a niche where those who choose to participate can express themselves and can be helpful to one's academic success. The group is open to all HFC students. You can join their meetings in person in Building 9, or you can join their meetings online via Zoom. For more information, go to hfcc.edu/bmqfg. Visit the website hfcc.edu/bmqfg.
Hi, I'm David Twitchell, host of We Are Not Alone, which airs the first Monday of each month right here on WHFR. We interview scientists and ufologists from around the country and around the world about the UFO-UAP phenomenon. We Are Not Alone has been a staple on WHFR since 2007, and since the Pentagon, Navy, and Air Force have all admitted to the UAP reality, the show's content has become even more prevalent. So join me, David Twitchell, the first Monday of each month at 2 p.m. on WHFR. We are not alone.
And that's the first Monday of every month. You can hear Dave Twitchell and We Are Not Alone here on WHFR 89.3. We are just about ready to dive into our last couple of features here. Jack Benny did a lot of road shows. He took his radio show on the road, obviously, and often to military bases or to major universities. If he was still around today, maybe he would make it over to Henry Ford College. Who knows? That would be fun, wouldn't it? That's not going to happen. But nonetheless, we have all his shows to take a listen to. And one of the reasons his shows survived is he saved a copy and gave them to UCLA on the West Coast, I believe, and a lot of those copies got out to people like you and me. So let's go back now to March 12, 1944. As we remind you, you're listening to WHFR Dearborn, featuring local and independent artists and old-time radio just like this.
Jack Benny, with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Dennis Day, Rochester, and yours truly, Don Wilson.
Thank you.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, let me take you behind the scenes of radio and show you how an announcer introduces a comedian to get the program off to a good start.
Go right ahead, Don.
You see, folks, we announcers depend upon holidays and special events to give meaning to our introduction.
That's right, folks. Every introduction has a meaning all its own.
For instance, last Thanksgiving, when I introduced Jack, I said, "Since this is a new Thanksgiving, we bring you an old turkey."
That's why Roosevelt went back to one Thanksgiving. He didn't want to hear that joke twice. Continue, Don.
When the Christmas holidays rolled around, I introduced Jack by saying, "We can't bring you Santa Claus, but we bring you a man who's holding the bag."
Now that joke never had a chance. It was given its primary training by Red Skelton, grounded by Abbott and Costello, and washed out by Fred Allen. All right, Don, proceed with your lecture on introductions.
When I introduced Jack on Washington's birthday, I said, "George Washington threw a dollar across the Potomac. We can't bring you that dollar, but we bring you the man who has all the others."
I'll never forget the reaction to that gag. The audience rose to their feet, bowed their heads for 1 minute, and sat down again. Continue, Don.
So you see, ladies and gentlemen, the various holidays have much to do with introducing a radio comedian. But this is not a holiday.
That's right.
So for absolutely no reason at all, I bring you Jack Benny.
Thank you. Hello again. This is Jack Benny talking. And Don, I agree that today isn't exactly a holiday, but there is a reason for introducing me to these sailors here at Livermore.
There is?
Why, certainly. I used to be a sailor myself, back in 1917.
Did they take men over 38 then?
Don, how could I be 38 then when I'm only 32 now? I mean, don't let this gray hair fool you. It isn't mine. So there.
But, Jack, 1917 was 27 years ago. And if you're 32 now, that means you entered the Navy when you were only 5 years old.
I was a daring little devil, wasn't I? You know, I still have the tattoo of Shirley Temple on my arm. I really have. Anyway, let's get on with
the... But, Jack, you were so young. What could the Navy do with you?
They made me an ensign. That's what?
An ensign at 5?
They thought I was 7 and shut up. This gray hair fooled them, too, you know. And, Don, I wish you wouldn't make me lose my temper while we're here. I'm sentimental about the Navy.
Oh, me too, Jack. You know, I wish I were a sailor. I feel that I could put my heart into that uniform.
Don. Don, you'll never... Oh, your heart. Your heart. Anyway, we better get started with the... Come in.
Mr. Benny?
Yes?
You may not remember me, but I'm Mr. London, the manager of the St. Francis Hotel.
Oh, yes. I've been staying there all week.
Well, congratulations. We got a room for you now.
Well, I'm glad. It was a little noisy sleeping in the lobby there, you know?
In the lobby? Why, Jack, wasn't it embarrassing getting undressed?
Oh, no, Don, no. They have two lobbies, one for men and one for women. And what a scramble getting dressed in the morning. Yesterday, I came out of there wearing a commander's pants, an admiral's coat, and a sailor's hat. I almost went crazy saluting myself. But, Don, no kidding, we have had a very exciting week up here, haven't we?
Oh, we certainly have.
Especially last Monday night at the Henry Kaiser shipyard when Mary launched that ship. We had a great time.
Well, I was enjoying it until the foreman at the shipyard insulted me.
Don, the foreman apologized. He told you he was nearsighted. He didn't try to launch you intentionally. It was was just a natural mistake, that's all.
Hello, Jack.
Oh, hello, Mary. How are
you? What's going on, boys?
Oh, we were just talking about you launching that ship Monday night.
Oh, that certainly was a thrill. I'll never forget it as long as I live.
And gosh, Mary, the way you socked the boat with that bottle. What a swing.
No kidding, Mary. You were terrific, really. The girl who launched that other ship didn't have half the swing you had.
She's never been out with a sailor.
I guess
the proudest moment of my life came when I launched the boat and said, I christen thee the Edward E. Hale.
But, gee, Mary, I asked you to try...
Don, I told you 1,000 times they wouldn't let me call it the SS Great Nut.
Oh, fine. Don probably wants you to launch it with sugar and cream, you know? But then on second thought, why should he? Grape nuts are for breakfast, not for launch. My. Did that come out of me? What happened then? What happened? Oh.
Oh, brother, those are the kind of jokes that keep us moving from camp to camp.
Yeah, but you know, Mary, I can't get over how many boats they've launched here in such a short time and the amount of champagne they have to use. Imagine all that champagne falling into the water.
Then that explains it.
What?
Yesterday, I saw a man fishing, and as he pulled one out of the water, the fish shrugged his fins and said... In my condition, who cares?
Mary, it's all right to be silly and but don't overdo it. You know, fish can't talk.
Well, this one was so cockeyed, he didn't know what he was doing.
Oh, well, that's different. But all in all, it has been an exciting week from the moment we crossed the bay and arrived in San Francisco.
Say, Jack, did you notice those huge Navy planes landing on the water?
Yes, and I was puzzled by those big things at the bottom where the wheels should be. What are they?
Those are pontoons.
Yes, you've seen them before, haven't you?
Pontoons?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, those are the things the automobiles use in Los Angeles during the rainy season. Oh, yes, I remember that. Well, look who's here, Alice Faye's pinup boy.
Hiya, Jackson. Hello, fellas.
Well, Phil, it's good to see you. What have you been doing all week?
Just fishing and wringing them out.
What?
The first time I ever had champagne with bones in it.
Oh.
Say, Jackson, you want to know who's stationed at this base? I just saw him on the outside.
No, who?
Robert Taylor.
Robert Taylor?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know he... Mary, come back here. No kidding. Phil, I didn't know Robert Taylor was stationed here.
Sure, he's a lieutenant. He's a flight instructor.
Well, what do you know? Now, I bet he looks handsome in his uniform, huh?
Oh, I don't know. I've seen him. When you stop to think about it, he's not so handsome.
Well, maybe not. I don't know.
When you stop to think about it, he's not so cute either.
Well, you'd know more about that than I would. I don't know.
And when you stop to think about it, he's just another man, that's all.
Well.
You know, Jack, I think they're crazy.
Who?
The girls who stop to think about it.
I should have known you were leading up to something. Phil, for heaven's sake, play a band number and get Mary out of this romantic mood.
Okay.
I was handsome, too, when I was a sailor.
Thank you.
was Spain, played by Phil Harris and his orchestra. And Phil, I want to tell you something. You've been with me about 9 years. The first time I really enjoyed your boys. You know?
Well, thanks, Jackson, but these ain't my boys. You know, I left my regular orchestra in Los Angeles.
Oh, well, I should have known this wasn't your regular orchestra. These fellas are wearing shoes, you know?
Now, that don't mean nothing. When my boys play, they have a reason for not wearing shoes.
They have?
Sure. When they come to an 8-bar rest, they got to have something to count on, don't they?
Well, now I've heard everything, you
know? Oh, Jack, you're always picking off Phil's orchestra. They must be pretty good. After all, they're working for Slapsy Maxie.
I know. What do you think made Maxie Slapsy? And now, fella...
All right, Jackson, all right. So my band ain't so good. What do you want me to do, fire the boys?
Well, it wouldn't be a bad idea, Phil. I mean, give them 2 weeks' notice.
Only 2 weeks' notice to fire them?
Sure.
What are you talking about? I got to give them 8 months' notice to learn a new song.
Well, then start now. I want them to know Jingle Bells by Christmas.
Listen, Jack.
What?
Phil may be too modest to brag about his orchestra, but he had an offer to play in one of the most exclusive places around here.
Really? Where?
The Rodeo Club.
Hey, that's a funny name for a night spot. I wonder why they call it the Rodeo Club.
Because after you take one drink, they throw you, hog tie you, and brand you to show that you've been waited on.
Well, gee, they must really be doing business. And now, fellas, come in.
Mr. Benny?
Yes?
You may not remember me, but I'm Mr. London, the manager of the St. Francis Hotel.
Yes, yes, I know.
We have your room ready, but due to the shortage of help, you'll have to make your own bed.
Oh, I don't mind making my own bed.
Good. Here's a hammer and saw. Get busy.
Well, anything to help, you know, I... And now, fellas, as a special tribute to the Livermore Air Base, tonight we're going to...
Hello, Mr. Benny.
Hello, Dennis. As I was saying, fellas, tonight we're going to...
How are you?
Fine, kid. Fine. As a special tribute to the Livermore Air Base...
Gee whiz, Mr. Benny, you haven't seen me all week and you don't even say, "Hiya, Dennis, old kid, old pal." Gee, I'm glad to see you. What have you been doing?
Okay, hiya, Dennis, old kid, old pal. Gee, I'm glad to see you. What have you been doing?
Nothing.
Just as I thought. Tonight, fellas, we're going to try...
Except last Tuesday.
What?
Last Tuesday night, I had a date with a beautiful blonde.
Dennis.
And oh boy, did I paint the town red. The Bal Tavern, the Gay 90s, the Top of the Mark, and the 1079 Club.
Wow. Wow. Hey, you. Listen, kid, Dennis, you really were stepping. Did your girl have a good time, too?
I don't know. She didn't show up.
Well, of all the things...
Dennis, there's no fun going to all those places by yourself.
There isn't?
Of course not. And another thing, kid, how can you afford to go to those expensive nightclubs?
I don't check my hat.
How can you save money that way?
Jack, this may come as a surprise to you, but when people get their hats back from the check room, they're supposed to leave the girl a tip.
Oh, yeah. Say, you know, girls are lucky. They don't have to check their hats. Huh?
Of course not.
Well, anyway, Dennis, getting back to... Say, I wonder...
Stop thinking about it. You'd look silly wearing a lady's hat.
I wasn't thinking about it at all. I was just thinking how silly it was for Dennis to go to all those nightclubs without his girl.
Well, gee, Mr. Benny, I was having so much fun, I didn't even realize she wasn't there.
Well, when did you miss her?
When I went to kiss her goodnight.
Well, at least it didn't spoil your evening. I'm glad you got around, kid.
Yeah, I went to one place yesterday afternoon where they threw me, hogtied me, and branded me.
Oh, the Rodeo Club.
No, the Income Tax Bureau.
Oh, yes, yes. March the 15th does roll around. Well, anyway, now that you're here, kid, how about singing a song for the boys, huh?
Okay.
Okay, well, let's have it.
There's no one as pretty, as pretty as Kitty. My blue-eyed Kitty, oh, too. When she walks along on the street, fellas shout, "Here, pretty Kitty, here, pretty Kitty, blue-eyes." You can hear them shout every time she goes out, "Here, pretty Kitty, here, pretty Kitty, blue eyes." But she looks at nobody, she's lonely in New York. Oh, she loves a doughboy named Johnny O'Rourke. That's why she'll never hear anyone till he'll shout, "I'm here, pretty Kitty, blue eyes." Her eyes are like the blue skies of Erin. Her beauty is something quite barren. There's no one as pretty as Kitty. She's got the whole town staring. When she walks along on the street, fellas shout, "Dilly-gadoosha, shinnamarusha, balderalda, blue eyes." You can hear them shout every time she goes out, "Dilly-gadoosha, shinnamarusha, balderalda, blue eyes." But she goes with no boy, she's got her memories. Oh, she loves a doughboy who's now overseas. That's why she'll never hear anyone till he'll shout, "I'm here, pretty Kitty, blue eyes." There's no one as pretty as
Kitty Blue Eyes, sung by Dennis Day for the first time on the air. Dennis, that was beautiful.
Thank you. Say, Mr. Benny, I wanted to talk to you about something. You know, when I was at the Income Tax Bureau, I got all mixed up.
You did? Why?
Well, my salary is $35, isn't it?
That's right.
And because my song only takes 2 minutes, you told me it amounts to $186,000 a week.
That's right, Ken.
Then what do I pay tax on, $35 or $186,000?
Dennis, $186,000 is a theoretical figure. You're not really getting that much.
I'm not?
No.
No wonder my girl didn't show up.
Dennis, let me try to...
Wait a minute, Jackson. Wait a minute. You better let me handle this. I'll explain this whole thing to the kid.
Oh, fine, fine.
Now, look, Dennis, theoretically, Jackson is right.
What?
Now, the $186,000 is your hypothetical compensation.
Uh-huh.
Which means that your remuneration is based on the limited time of your productivity.
Oh.
Now, the element is the question to segregate the actual from the supposition.
Oh, uh-huh. Brother.
Now, so summing it all up and then condensing it to simple phraseology...
Yes?
You're a bum. Phil.
Hypothetical remuneration, phraseology. Phil, for heaven's sake, where did you learn all those big words?
Oh, I was up with them all night. And Jackson, the next time you give me a speech like that to read, I'm going to punch you right in the nose.
Phil, just once I wanted people to know that you can pronounce words even though you don't know what you're talking about, you know?
Oh, you and your educated writers, you.
Come in.
Mr. Benny?
Yes?
You may not remember me, but I'm Mr. London, the manager of the St. Francis
Hotel. I know.
You lucky man, I now have a room for you completely furnished.
Oh, fine. Thank you. That's well.
I'm glad.
Tell me, do I have a tub?
Yes, but if you button your coat, nobody will notice it.
I can't understand at all. Oh, my goodness, I forgot to ask him something.
I'll get him back. Oh, Mr. London! Mr. London! Here he comes, Jack. Mr. Benny wants to talk to you.
Mr. Benny?
Yes?
You may not remember me, but I'm Mr.
Never mind that. Now, here's what I'd like to know, Mr. London. Do you serve breakfast in the rooms?
Why, yes, certainly. You can have anything you want.
Good. Now, tomorrow morning for breakfast, I want grape nuts flakes.
Why?
Ooh, what he said.
Why? Why? Are you crazy?
No, I'm London, manager of the St. Francis
Hospital. I know. Peculiar fellow, but likable. Now, where were we before he came in?
I was a bum.
Oh, yes, yes. No, Dennis, you're not a bum. And let's not start that again. Let's get on with the... I'll take it. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Benny, this is Rochester.
Rochester, what's the idea of calling me long distance from Beverly Hills?
I'm making out my income tax and I'm stuck.
What's sticking you?
The first line. The one that says gross income. What's that?
Well, that means your entire income. For example, Rochester, I pay you $2,000 a year. That means your gross income is
$2,000. $2,000?
Yes.
Boss, is that theoretical, hypothetical, or did the operator give me the wrong number?
Don't worry, you haven't got the wrong number. Now look, Rochester, in figuring your income tax, put down all you made, then list your deductions, such as contributions, donations, bad investments.
Bad investments? Does that include money lost while on bended knee?
No, it doesn't. It has nothing to do with shooting craps. Anyway, I thought you told me Lady Luck always smiles at you.
She does, but yesterday she forgot to use Irium.
Well, it serves you right for playing with strangers.
This wasn't a stranger, boss. You know my friend Sam?
Yes.
Well, he's got the only paradise you can locate with radar.
You mean they're trick dice?
Trick? When you roll them out, one comes up 7, the other 11, so there's nothing to be in doubt about.
Well, this certainly ought to teach you a lesson.
Uh-huh. Yesterday sure was a bad day for us.
Us?
Yeah, that green sport coat of yours fits Sam perfectly.
Rochester, you mean to say you lost my sport coat in a crab game?
I couldn't help it, boy.
You couldn't help it? You had the nerve to gamble with my coat?
I was trying to win back your tuxedo.
Well, Rochester, you better have my clothes back by the time I come home.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Oh, say, boss.
Now what?
If you go to another luncheon, will you do me a favor?
Sure, what is it?
Bring me back 2 cases of fish.
2 cases of fish?
Yeah, and when you pull out the hooks, cork up the holes. I don't want to lose any of it.
Okay, I will. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Darn it, every time I go away, something happens.
Mr. London, it really seems a shame Jack didn't have to go all through all that trouble about getting a room.
Yes, it was too bad, Don. What could I do?
Well, frankly, you should have consulted me.
You mean you have the answer?
Right. You should have put Jack in a breakfast room.
Well, that never occurred to me. Next time, I will.
I want to thank Captain Champion, Commander Walker, Lieutenant Tyser, and all the men here at the Livermore Naval Air Station for another swell day. And now, just another word. President Roosevelt, in a recent statement, urged every young American who will be a high school graduate by July 1st to investigate the Army and Navy Reserve Program immediately. It is of the greatest importance to the nation that as many as possible take the March 15th examination. For those who properly qualify in this age group, the Enlisted Reserve Program provides the best possible opportunity for them to serve their country. These tests will be held in your local high school at 9 o'clock Wednesday morning, March 15th. Thank you and good night.
I'm Rob with Two B's, host of The Jump Button. Join me every Thursday night from 8 to 11 p.m. to hear super dorky radio. Things like soundtracks, video game remixes, covers, cartoon and anime themes, nerdcore hip-hop, novelty songs, 8-bit, and a lot more. So listen to The Jump Button, Thursdays from 8 to 11 p.m. only right here on WHFR.FM. We're making waves.
What are you doing out there?
Come on!
I saw you at the game the other night. Yeah, you, up there getting mad, acting like we're all out there making a million a game. But let me be real with you. This isn't the pros. It's school sports, and it's a game, our game. So please, let us play.
School sports fans, remember, when you cheer for your team, make noise for the right reasons. This message presented by the NFHS and the NIAAA.
And all student athletes in Michigan.
The Jack Benny Program.
Gentlemen, it is usually our custom to take you to Jack Benny's home in Beverly Hills. But at the moment, Jack is taking a bath, so we'll take you to Mary Livingston's house instead.
Oh, Pauline.
Yes, Miss Livingston?
You can have the rest of the evening off. I have a date tonight. We may go to a movie.
Oh, that's nice.
Or we may go to a nightclub.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I'm going with Mr. Benny.
Oh.
I know what you mean, Pauline, but I haven't been out with Mr. Benny since we got back from Europe.
Gee, I'll bet your trip to England would have been a complete fizzle if it hadn't been for Phil Harris.
You still have a crush on Phil, haven't you, Pauline?
Uh-huh. Did you get to act with Mr. Harris at the Palladium?
Yes, we did one sketch together, and at the end of the scene, he kissed me.
Oh, tell me, Miss Livingston, what's it like when Phil Harris kisses you?
It's like being slapped in the face with a bar rag.
Residence.
May I speak to Miss Livingston, please? This is Barbara Stanwyck.
Just a minute, please. Miss Livingston, it's Miss Stanwyck.
Oh, thank you, Pauline. Hello, Barbara.
Hello, Mary. I called you because Bob has a conference at the studio tonight, and I'm having a few girls over for bridge. Would you like to join us?
Oh, I'd love to, Barbara. But I promised Jack I'd go out with him tonight.
Oh, then you're going to see my picture. Sorry, wrong number.
Well, how do you know?
Jack just called me for passes. Yes, and tomorrow night, Jack's taking you to see Loves of Carmen.
Well, what makes you so sure?
He asked me for Rita Hayworth's phone number.
Oh. No wonder I've never seen any of Lassie's pictures. She hasn't got a phone. Anyway, Barbara, you shouldn't have given Jack those passes.
Well, I was going to turn him down, but when he came over to pick them up, he said he'd tell a joke on his program, plugging my picture.
Oh, fine. Did he tell you the joke?
Yes. It was a dilly about two termites who get indigestion from eating bad wood. Sorry, wrong lumber.
If he tells that gag in the program, I'll punch him right in the nose.
I already did. You know, Mary, Jack can be so corny. I can't understand why you go out with him all the time.
Oh, he isn't so bad, Barbara. I'll admit Jack may not be the handsomest man in the world, but he's not the homeliest.
Well, no.
He may not be the wittiest, but he's not the dullest.
No, I guess not.
And he may not be the most generous, but...
Shall we dance?
Oh, anyway, Barbara, Barbara, Jack isn't so bad.
No, I guess you're right, Mary. He did bring Bob a nice present from Paris. A beautiful, bright yellow beret.
A yellow beret?
Yeah, Bob wore it yesterday at the studio.
Oh, I bet it was a riot.
No, but it started one.
What happened?
Phone or no phone, Lassie chased him up a tree.
Well, imagine giving Bob a beret. Say, Barbara, did Jack bring you anything from Europe?
No, but I'm awfully glad he's back.
You are?
Nobody can do rough dry like he does.
Well, you can thank me, too. I help on my days off.
Well, I'm sorry you can't come over tonight, Mary, but I hope you like my picture.
Oh, I'm sure I will. And maybe we can get together next week. Goodbye, Barbara.
Bye.
Well, I'm all ready to go to the movies. Have me on my umbrella, will you, Pauline?
Miss Livingston, it stopped raining.
I know, but you never sat next to Mr. Benny when he's eating popcorn. Well, he should be here in a few minutes.
Here's your dessert, Mr. Benny.
Ah, strawberry shortcake with whipped cream.
You better eat it fast or you'll be late for the movies.
I know, I know. Rogers, look at me. Do you think I need a shave?
Well, yes and no.
What do you mean, yes and no?
After the movies, if you take Miss Livingston home, by the way, at Wilshire Boulevard, no. Griffith Park, yes.
I'm not going by way of Griffith Park. My car's too old for that. Well, I'm almost through eating.
Say, boss, before you leave, I better put a patch over that slow leak in your rubber cushion.
Why?
Last time you went to the movies, you kept sinking lower and lower, and Miss Livingston thought you were unhappy with the picture.
Oh, yeah. Well, put a piece of adhesive on the leak or some scotch tape. I mean, fix it up any old way.
Any old way?
Rochester. Rochester, that echo again. Didn't you hear it?
No, boss, I didn't hear a thing.
That's funny. I wonder if I'm just imagining it. Oh, well. Here's the plate, Rochester. I finished my dessert.
Just a minute, boss. Let me look at you again. Yeah, I'll go get the razor and shave you.
Shave me?
Yeah, you've got so much whipped cream on your face, it'd be a shame just to wipe it off.
Never mind. I'll use my napkin. Now, lay out a suit for me, will you, Rochester?
Okay. Oh, by the way, Mr. Benny, Dennis Day came over a little while ago, and he said he wanted to see you.
Oh, well, why didn't you tell me? Dennis! Dennis!
Here I am, Mr. Benny.
Oh. Ah, hello, kid.
Hello. Say, Mr. Benny, I don't know why people rave so much about television. What programs? Fair. I've been sitting here watching it for 3 hours, and all they've shown is that ocean picture. All you can see is the waves splashing up against the screen.
Dennis, you're looking at the Bendix. The television's in the other room. Now, what did you want to see me about?
Well, my mother had to go to a club meeting, and she won't be back till late, so she told me to come over here so I won't get into mischief.
Mischief? Dennis, you're old enough to take care of yourself.
No, I'm not. Last week when my mother left me alone, it was terrible.
What?
I was sitting there getting bored. I wanted some excitement, so I stuck my head in the Mixmaster.
You stuck your head in the Mixmaster? That's the craziest thing I've ever heard of.
If you've never tried it, don't knock it.
Oh, my goodness. Look, kid, from what you told me, I'm not going to leave you alone in my house either. Now, you better come with Mary and me. We're going to see Sorry, Wrong Number.
With Barbara Stanwyck?
Dennis, I don't blame you, though. Gee, she's a wonderful actress. I don't know, she's so realistic. You know, so vibrant. So...
So Leone?
Dennis. Dennis, you heard that echo, didn't you?
No. Do you still keep hearing it, Mr. Benny?
Yes, and I don't know how to get rid of it. I don't know what to do.
Why don't you stick your head in the Mixmaster?
Oh, stop. Now, Dennis, while I'm changing my clothes, run over the song you're going to do on the program, will you?
Okay.
Take it and make it sublime.
Well, I'm all dressed, Dennis. Come on, we'll pick up Mary and go to the movies. Well, kids, here we are at the theater.
Come on, Dennis.
Uh-oh.
What's the matter, Jack?
See, there are three of us, and I've only got two passes. Now, let me see.
Shall I kill myself?
No! I'll figure out something.
Jack, you ought to be ashamed of yourself asking Barbara Stanwyck for passes.
Oh, I don't know, Mary. I gave her passes to my picture.
For your picture, they were dropping tickets from airplanes.
I didn't mind the tickets, but I got hit on the head with a dish. Oh, well. Well, I'll go over and buy Dennis's ticket. Wait here for me.
Gee, Dennis, you'll love Sorry Wrong Number. It's so tense and exciting.
It is?
Yeah. All through the picture, Barbara Stanwyck tries to use the telephone. And by accident, the wires get crossed and she hears two men plotting her own murder.
Gee.
Well, come on, let's go. I got your ticket, Dennis. And Dennis, as we go in, hold my hand and call me Daddy.
Tickets, please.
Here you are.
Jack, I want to sit in the loges.
Loges? These passes are for general admission. The loges will be an extra 60 cents.
Oh. Well.
Daddy, get your hand out of my pocket.
No, I'm sorry. How much did you say that was, mister?
Oh, I gave it to him already.
Oh. Well, let's go in. Imagine a big star like Barbara Stanwyck couldn't get me low seats. Come on.
Hot dogs, scorecards, pennants. Get your football pennants here. We have both teams, UCLA and Stanford pennants.
Wait a minute, bud. This is a theater. What's the idea of selling football pennants?
For the newsreel. Pennants. Get your pennants here. Hot dogs, scorecards, cushions, soft cushions. Oh, you brought your own, huh, bud?
Yes.
Come on, Jack.
Immediate seating, third aisle to your right, please.
Come on, kids, this aisle to the right, right here. Here, I'll open the door, Mary. Gosh, the picture started already.
Yeah, here are three seats over here.
Get in, Dennis.
Use a gun.
talking. They're plotting a murder. Operator, what's the matter with you?
Now remember, George, go in the back way, climb the fire escape, and take your time. Don't make any noise. Go up slowly, slowly, slowly.
Slowly, only.
There it is again. That echo. Dennis, Mary, you heard it, didn't you?
Jack, it's embarrassing.
Now remember, George, from here on it's up to you. See that she's dead by midnight.
Okay, pal. Leave it to me.
Operator! Operator, there's so much time! Listen to me!
I'm trying to get Murray Hill 3509.
Oh, never mind that. Now get me the police. Look, operator, I'm an invalid, and I just had a terrible shock tonight on the telephone, and I'm very anxious to trace a call.
Yeah, I thought it was very good.
And what a finish when she found out those two men on the telephone were actually plotting her murder.
Yeah, but that's the only part, Mary, that wasn't believable. Imagine the coincidence of just picking up the phone and hearing two men plotting your own murder. I don't know. It was too far-fetched.
It was not.
I agree with Daddy.
Dennis, you can stop calling me that now. Anyway, Mary, I must admit that I enjoyed watching the picture, but in real life, a thing like that couldn't happen.
Oh, it couldn't, eh? Well, look after you last year when you were worried about your option, and you tried to get your sponsor, Mr. Riggio, on the phone.
Look, Mary.
What was it, Mary? What happened?
I'll tell you what happened. It was last May, near the end of the season, and Jack was a nervous wreck.
Busy. It can't be busy all this time. Operator. Operator. Quiet, Polly. Operator. Operator.
I'm sorry, that line is busy.
Listen, operator. I've been trying to get that number for the last 20 minutes. It's my sponsor's office. They have a switchboard there.
I'm sorry, the line is busy.
It can't be busy. I've been ringing that number since 25 after 11. Do you know what time it is now?
For the correct time, dial Albrecht.
I know what time it is. Look, operator, I'm Jack Benny. I have a radio program. My option comes up at 12 o'clock today. If I don't hear from my sponsor, Mr. Riggio, in 15 minutes, I'll be out of a job. Now get me Hollywood, 7337.
7337.
Quiet. Holly, here's a cracker. And eat it slowly. It may be your last. Operator.
I'm ringing the number.
Good. I know it can't be busy. I'm sure there must be something wrong with you. It's ringing! It's ringing!
Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Hello? Hello? Hello? Is that you, Mr. Riggio?
Mr. Riggio? That's my sponsor. Mr. Riggio, this is me, Jack Benny.
Hello, Frank.
They can't hear me. The wires must be crossed.
Well, Frank, I've given the matter a great deal of thought, and I've decided to let him go.
Oh, I see. Well, it's going to be quite a shock to him. He's been with us a long time.
I know, Frank, but he's had it coming. His work has fallen off so badly, it isn't funny anymore.
Yikes! They're talking about me. Mr. Riggio, operator.
Well, Mr. Riggio, don't you think you ought to warn him and then give him another chance?
Yeah.
Might be difficult to replace him.
That's right. Tell him, Frank. Tell him. Nice boy, Frank. Nice boy, tell him.
No, Frank, I've made up my mind. I think we should look for a younger man.
Younger? Well, I'm only 39. You didn't think I was old 5 years ago when I was 38. You've got to listen to me.
No, you don't think warning him would do any good, eh, Mr. Riggio?
No, he's had his chance.
Mr. Riggio, please. Frank had a swell idea. Warn me. Give me another chance. I might be difficult to replace. Mel Blanc has 5 shows. So he couldn't even try.
Well, all right, Mr. Riggio. It isn't going to be easy, but I'll tell him.
I've been cut off. Operator! Operator! Operator!
Number, please.
Operator, I want Hollywood 7337. Will you please get it for me?
You may dial that number direct.
But I've been dialing all morning. My finger's so swollen it won't fit in the hole. Thank you. Only 5 minutes. 25 minutes to go. If I could only talk to Mr. Riggio. If I could plead with him, beg him, like I did last year. Maybe I could talk him into giving me another...
Sorry, that line is busy.
Busy. What am I going to do? I got to think fast. It's 4:56. Wait a minute, I know. I'll call my agent. That's it, my agent. Why am I paying him 9%? That might be Mr. Riggio. Oh, hello?
Hello, is that you, Edna?
Edna?
This is Johnny McGuire. I just got off my shift. Haven't seen a woman in 3 years. You're the first one I called.
You must have the wrong number.
Ah, don't give me that, Edna. I recognize your voice right away.
But I...
Come on, Edna. Let you and me step out tonight. I'll buy you a nice big dinner.
I'm telling you, you have the wrong... Dinner? No. What am I thinking of? No. Then he'd want... I'm sorry, you have the wrong number. I wish I were, Eddie. At least then I'd know... Oh, my goodness. Only 12:03. No time to call my agent now. I gotta get Mr. Riggio. Maybe he hasn't signed anybody else yet. I'll tell him I'll do anything he asks me. Anything. I'll let him cut my salary. This year I'll suggest it myself. Why not? The line's clear. It's not busy. I still have time.
This is Hollywood, 7337.
Yeah, get me Mr. Riggio, quick. This is Jack Benny.
Mr. Riggio is busy on another line. Will you call back?
No. I'll hold on. I've only got 3 minutes. Hello?
Hello?
Is that you, Mr. Riggio? Oh, it's you, pal. Shut your big mouth. Mr. Riggio, I wasn't talking to you. It was my parrot. This is Jack Benny. Hello again.
Well, Jack, I'm glad you called. I want to talk
to you. Mr. Riggio, please, before you say anything, listen to me. You got to hear my side of it. I know I've been on the air a long time, but I'm not through yet. Honest, I'm not. There's still a few good years left in me, and I want you to have me.
But, Jack...
L-A-S-M-F-T. L-A-S-M-F-T.
But, Jack...
La-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. I've made mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. I mean, everybody but you, Mr. Riggio. And I've done everything you've asked me to. Last year, I kept my eye on the red bullseye till it was bloodshot. Mr. Riggio, you've got to listen to me.
Jack, what are you so upset about? We have no intention of letting you go.
But you don't understand, Mr. What? You mean you're going to pick up my option?
Why, certainly. I've been trying to call you all morning. Your phone's been busy.
My phone busy? Oh. Oh.
Tell me, Jack. Whatever gave you the idea we wouldn't take up your option?
Well, Mr. Riggio, I called you a few minutes ago and the wires got crossed. See, I heard you talking to a man named Frank.
Frank? Oh, yes. He's my office manager.
Well, I overheard you telling him to let somebody go, that you didn't want him anymore.
Oh, yes. We had to discharge him. He was a bookkeeper. Very incompetent.
The bookkeeper? Oh. the bookkeeper. Well, Mr. Riggio, if the man wasn't doing his work, what else could you do? I mean, it's not your fault if he isn't capable. There's no place for sentiment in business. That's what I like about you, Mr. Riggio. You don't let your heart rule your head. That bookkeeper got what was coming to him. I don't believe in a man whining and trying to hang on to a job when he's not wanted. I agree with you. If a man fails to deliver, let him go. Get rid of him, I say. Fire!
Ladies and gentlemen, travel on our highways is increasing. It is now 11% above pre-war peak. So when traveling, obey the law. Don't take a chance and be careful. The life you save may be your own. Jack will be back in just a moment, but first...
Ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned in for the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show, which follows immediately. And on Saturday, be sure to listen to A Day in the Life of Dennis Day. I want to thank Miss Barbara Stanwyck for being with us on the program tonight and for the passes. And and Rita, I couldn't get you on the phone, so send three, please. Now, to my friends in San Francisco, I'll be seeing you at the Opera House on Friday, October 22nd, at the Friars Frolic for the Variety Club benefit.
Well, you're going to San Francisco, eh, Jack?
Uh-huh.
Oh. You going to go by plane?
By plane? Well, no.
Oh, then you're going on the train.
The train? No.
Oh, then you're going to drive your car.
No. No, you see, I made a deal with a fellow who's going that way.
Oh, you're going to share expenses.
You know, all I have to do is help him unload the oranges.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
And there you have Jack Benny from 1948. As a matter of fact, October 7 of 1948. That is going to wrap it for today's Radio Vault extravaganza. We're going to make way for the latest installment of This Just In. And we're going to follow that up with Mountain Stage from just the other day. Then starting next week, we have a new program starting at 1 o'clock here on WHFR. Hang in there for that. And as always, if you like the mysteries, we do that on Sunday night between 9 o'clock in the p.m. and 12 midnight. Suspense and Johnny Dollar and Richard Diamond and Escape and Gunsmoke and all that stuff on Sunday Night Mysteries. We will talk to you at that time, and if not then we'll talk to you in another week for WHFR's very own Radio Vault extravaganza. See you soon. Enjoy the warm weather. Bye. Thank you. From the campus of Henry Ford College, you are listening to WHFR Dearborn, featuring local and independent artists.
The following pre-recorded hour is a WHFR Dearborn new music presentation.
You are listening to WHFR Dearborn. I am Rob with Two B's, and this is This Just In, our weekly pre-recorded new music spotlight show. Let's jump straight into the music. We're going to start things local. From their latest self-released single, here is Ann Arbor-based Tension Splash with Scared. On This Just In, on WHFR.FM, we're making waves.